May I have your attention, please? Your attention. Please. May I have some? Please. What if I put up gameplay of Subway Surfer and used a robot voice? Would that keep you stimulated?
Wikipedia says that people born between the year 1981 and 1996 are part of a group called Millennials. And I am a 96 baby. Hello, Year of the Rat. What's up? I'm cusping on that millennial Gen Z line, so I can relate to all you Gen Zers, okay? I know what cap means, I know what drip means, and I also don't remember where I was when 9/11 happened. However, Gen Z, there is a difference between us. We're both a generation that grew up on the internet. But you grew up with the internet. We grew up with the internet. The internet didn't used to always look like this. It has metamorphosized a multitude of times. Now, if you talk to an older millennial, they'll tell you the horror stories of the late 90s internet. How the internet used to be paired with your home's landline. And if you don't know what a landline is, good. If you wanted to surf the net at blazing speeds of 7 kilobytes a second, then you couldn't use your telephone at the same time. This was before texting even existed, so if you needed to talk to someone, you had to call them and look up their phone number in that 20-pound weapon known as a phone book, and then if someone else was using the internet, they'd get the pleasure of listening to... Although, if I had to make a sound that represented the entire internet, it would sound exactly like this. I didn't grow up with dial-up, but I did grow up in a time where the internet looked completely different. By the time I was exploring the interwebs, we got speeds up to 1 megabyte per second. So the highest quality video you could stream on YouTube was in 240p, or this big. And it would still buffer. A lot. Gen Z, you weren't there when YouTube had a 5-star scoring system and the subscribe button was yellow and people would put these things all over their videos. You weren't there when the videos were in a 4:3 aspect ratio because that's what TVs looked like. You weren't there when a background for a website would be a never-ending grid of a JPEG and music would play against your will and your cursor would turn into a sparkly wand and... Okay, that's actually pretty cool. Whatever happened to that? And then the person who built the website would go, it's looking pretty good, but you know what this web page really needs? A counter that'll tell you the total number of people who visited. Let me just copy this HTML code I found online. And if you're around my age and you also had unsupervised computer time, then great, you were also there to experience the pre-puberty years of the internet. Try to imagine the internet without social media. No Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or MySpace. Were people back then just not talking about themselves or sharing their opinions online? Were we as a society more connected with the people we knew in the real world? No, of course not. People have been sharing their opinions online since day one. They were just doing it on random message boards. I know it sounds trivial nowadays, but there was once a novelty in being able to type anything you wanted into the computer and then someone else you didn't know would instantaneously respond. Even Neopets, a game targeted to children, had chat rooms and let anyone send unfiltered messages to children. I'm surprised I didn't meet any weirdos. That's one thing that'll never change with the internet. There will always be weirdos online. In fact, most of a weirdo's life is spent behind a computer. I would know. I think people loved sending messages so much that sometimes your friend would send you a message that said,
"You've just been hit by the duck truck. Send this message to 80 of your friends and you'll be as sexy as a truck."
Ignore and you'll be hit by a 16-wheeler. You have 7 days.
And instead of blocking that person, some people would keep the chain going. Hey, I have a quick question. When was the last time you ever had to type a specific website into your address bar? Probably somewhere about 10 years, give or take. You just type in a Y, and then YouTube pops up. You put in a T, you get Twitter, and P gets you picturesofalligators.com. And if you had a specific question you wanted to ask the internet, you just Yahoo it, right? Yahoo? Oh, no, that's not the one you kids are using. You kids are using that new search engine, right? Ask Jeeves? I know there's like four main websites that everyone goes on, but back then, instead of having a social media account, people made their own websites. So there were a bunch of different websites for you to explore, and to help you find those websites, you had a few search engines to pick from. Everyone loves to dunk on Bing for even attempting to be a search engine, but back in the day, Google had some competition. Obviously, I can see why Google ultimately won the search engine battle. Google is a great company, and I would recommend Google to all my peers and coworkers. I love Google! As much as I love the internet, some of the best memories we had on the computer weren't even on the internet, were they? Sometimes the internet would just go down. But did that stop us? Did we go outside? No. We were still able to supply ourselves with hours of entertainment even without an internet. All you had to do was click Start, All Programs, Accessories, Games, and then... Space Cadet Pinball. I guarantee every millennial watching this right now just got hit with a big wave of nostalgia. This game might seem simple because there's only two buttons that you can press, but when you really got into it, this game had a whole lot more going on. Trust me. Space Cadet Pinball was all we had sometimes, and I cherished every second of it. But if you were anything like me growing up, you were also practicing your art skills. And luckily, every computer came pre-installed with a top-of-the-line painting software that every artist needs. Yeah, this program's got everything. There's a line tool, and a bucket tool, and a circle tool. And sometimes when I was really bored, I would make a black rectangle, scribble the freeform selection tool on it, and then blammo! Yeah, I still got it. I just made a masterpiece. And, fun James bonus tip, for some extra self-induced epilepsy, hold down Control-I, which will invert the colors, so your masterpiece will go,
oh my god, oh, it hurts to look at!
Hey, looks like you're trying to create a conclusion to this YouTube video. Would you like my help?
No, Clippy. Even when you were around, I never used you. I just liked having you there to keep me company. The internet is still a relatively new invention that is ever changing the way we live. And we have yet to see the full effects of what being connected since birth does to a person. The fact that the accumulation of all human knowledge can now fit in your pocket? That's going to affect your day-to-day life! Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you to get off the internet, touch grass, and live your life to the fullest. Otherwise, I'd be a hypocrite. And unemployed. There's no denying all the positive things that the internet has to offer. But I'm also not going to deny all the negative things that come with instant gratification, too. As technology advances, so too do we advance the amount of time we spend online. The internet can connect us to a million different people and perspectives that we never would have been exposed to before. But it can also expose us to some really nasty people and perspectives. And the only thing we can do about those people is shrug and say, sorry, that's the internet. So, are we, as a society, better off with the internet? I think so. But just, I don't know, just remember to drink water and stretch. Alright, that's the lesson of this video. Go stretch. I'm serious, right now, go touch your toes.
Pinatas. I love pinatas. It's perfect for when you want to beat something to death, but also want candy.
Why do they make it look so pretty? Most of the time when you're playing with it, it looks like this.
What the, Alex, what are you doing here?
I just wanted to know what it would feel like to have a million subscribers.
No, go, get out. Go back to It's Alex Clark and wait your turn.
Okay, fine.
Don't come back unless you have cake. Pinatas. Here's a story that involved me when I was a first grader in a pinata. I don't know if any of you guys did this in your elementary school, but when it was someone's birthday, that kid would bring treats for the whole class. And then the whole class would take 10 minutes, stop everything they're doing, and then pass out the pastries to everyone. How come we don't do that anymore? In high school, depending on the teacher, they don't do anything for your birthday party. And in college, heck, no one even talks to you. So I have a twin sister, and we were in the first grade together. So when it came time for our birthdays, we had to celebrate two birthdays. It's double birthdays. We gotta do something extra special. My mom had an idea.
Let's do a pinata.
But since my mom is super cheap, she decided to make her own pinata out of paper mache. And it turns out making homemade pinatas are easy. All you gotta do is blow up a balloon, cover it in paper mache, wait for it to harden, pop the balloon inside, cut a hole open, fill it with candy, cover the hole back up with paper mache, paint it, and then beat it senseless. Simple. So my mom went above and beyond and made a sphere pinata for our entire first grade class. Me and my sister's birthday is towards the end of the school year. In elementary school, that last week of school, like, you don't even do anything. It doesn't even count. So hopefully my teacher wasn't too mad at what was about to transpire. My sister and I were just pumped the whole school day. Because we helped build the pinata. We helped paint it, and now we're going to help beat it to pieces. The teacher eventually called out,
"All right, class, James's mom made us a pinata, so we're all going to go outside and whack it."
Oh, yes, this was perfect. It was our birthday. We got to beat up a pinata at school. I have the best mom. Me and my sister got a swing first because we're the birthday boys. We didn't end up breaking it, but I wasn't mad. Let these other non-birthday people have some fun. I'm a generous guy. Hey, in the end, I just want the candy. So the next guy goes up, then the next, and then eventually everyone got a turn. Well, a pinata is supposed to break, ain't it? Apparently, my mom was a little precautious and put a few extra layers of paper mache on the pinata so that way everyone would get a turn. Yay! And apparently, she also overestimated the strength of paper mache and first graders. But did this teacher let the whole class down? No. You know what she did? Bless her soul. She said,
"All right, class, we're all gonna take turns throwing this against a curb."
I mean, what other option did this teacher have? She could have stabbed it, but I don't think that would have been very fun. Looking back, she might have just been wanting to speed up the process, but as a group of 7-year-olds, we had a blast. Also, I'm glad the pinata was not in the shape of an animal, because imagine how traumatizing that would have been as 7-year-olds to curb stomp a unicorn. We would have been like little tiny mob bosses. All right, Tony, you ready to give up the candy? Such a shame you feel that way, Tony. Bruce? I'm glad my mom was so thoughtful putting all those layers of paper mache in the pinata, because we all got a turn throwing the pinata on the ground. I remember getting so into it, I remember jumping up in the air before smashing the pinata onto the pavement. Nothing was going to get in between me and whatever candy was in there. Pretty soon though, we were all getting pretty antsy. Everyone was like, I was promised there'd be candy. Eventually, after what felt like an eternity of beating this pinata into the ground, we got a rip. I don't know if you guys saw the first episode of The Walking Dead. It's actually the only episode I've ever seen. And there's a scene in the first episode where the zombies rip open a horse and eat its organs. Well, that was pretty much what it looked like after we got a rip in the pinata. I don't remember what candy was in there, but hopefully it was worth it. And that was probably the best and worst pinata I ever broke.
Quick, what do we know about goats? They stiffen up and fall over when they're scared?
Good, what else?
Ooh, I know! Their kids have the same name as our kids. Which is kids!
Yeah, that does open the door for some pretty hilarious puns. Anything else? Yes, you in the back?
You don't want to stare into their eyes for too long.
Well, class, I'll admit, you do know a bit about goats, but you're all forgetting the most iconic goat fact of all. You know, their goats scream.
Goat scream, yeah.
Anyone who's anyone who knows anything about goats know that these rectangle-eyed demons make weird human-sounding screams. And we all find these little freaks of nature so funny that screaming goats get referenced in all sorts of media, like commercials and movies, and are still getting referenced as recently as 2024. So why then did Peter Griffin call this a sheep?
Sorry, guys, somebody emailed me a video of a sheep screaming.
Now that I think about it, Conan O'Brien called this a sheep, too.
There's a viral video going around of a sheep. This is real.
And if this really is a goat, why is the original video called The Screaming Sheep?
And I've never, ever in my life seen a sheep or met a sheep that sounds like this.
Take a good look, because this is the face that will haunt your dreams.
What did you see?
Lamb. They were screaming.
That was the worst Super Bowl call in the history of the Super Bowl.
Sorry to burst the bubble, children.
People are saying it's fake and that it's dubbed over.
It's good.
This is real.
Chapter 1. Why did we all think this was a goat? This has to be like one of them Mandela effects, right? You're telling me this unedited 6-second video that shaped an entire generation's perception of what the common barn animal goats scream like wasn't even a f*** goat? Someone's been pulling the wool over all of our eyes. Or maybe the original poster is deceptive and untrustworthy, and this really is a goat.
Hey, I'm not going to stand for you questioning the integrity of the original poster. They would never lie to us.
Okay, let's see. All the other videos on their channel are of sheep. In fact, it's only sheep. I can't even find one stinking goat on this whole stinking farm. And if we get real investigative and use an internet archive, we can clearly see that the video was always called The Screaming Sheep. But I'm positive it's screaming goats we love so much, because if you type screaming goats into Amazon, you get all of the screaming goat merch, and if you type screaming sheep, you get all of the screaming goat merch. And, just because I have another example, in the Shaun the Sheep movie, they had a whole farm of sheep that any one of could have screamed, but it's the one and only goat character that goes... Granted, the sheep in the original video was just recently sheared, so I understand that it doesn't immediately give "this is a sheep" vibes, but were Peter Griffin and Conan O'Brien really the only ones who read the title while the rest of us collectively thought, I think I know what a goat sounds like, and that is definitely a goat. How did we get from a 6-second video of a screaming sheep to all these goats? Chapter 2, The Beginning. According to this Google Trends graph, from 2005 to 2008, no one gave a shit about screaming goats. And that makes sense. No one knew they could do that. But then, just at the start of the 2008 housing market crash, we see a little bump. I believe this is because videos of animals making unexpected sounds was kind of the thing back then. Videos like Man Goat and Man Argues with Spitting Goat made the rounds from 2008 to 2011, but their success kind of stayed on the internet, you know? Like, they were funny videos, but nothing I'd make a commercial about. 2012 rolled around, and people were done with screaming goats. But one user still had hope that, in time, people would once again care about screaming hooved animals. On the 8th of April, 2012, while everyone was enjoying a nice Easter Sunday on the Screaming Sheep Farms, the YouTube user AJQ2891 captured the exact moment that their recently sheared Oxford sheep, Ophelia, let out a humorous and completely genuine scream. Then, for the rest of the day, they painted eggs or something, I don't know. But then, on the very next day, AJ posted the video for the entire world to witness Ophelia's monumental sheep scream. And almost overnight, the video would be seen by no one. And it would stay that way for the next 5 months, until one day when the video would fall upon the eyes of a Redditor. And baby, I'm low on karma. Ophelia's video got posted on Reddit, and then reposted on Reddit, and then seemingly overnight, Ophelia the Screaming Sheep went viral. Ophelia was so beloved that she found herself off the internet too, on places like Conan and this British show RudeTube that I couldn't find clips for because I'm not British. With Screaming Sheep being the next viral sensation, AJQ quickly ran out to the farm, recorded another hilarious scream of Ophelia, and managed to record some of their screaming lambs. Guess that's why it's called the Screaming Sheep Farms. You know, just every animal here has a weird, unnatural scream. Honestly, it's a nightmare to live here. Also, we know it's Ophelia who stars in The Screaming Sheep 2 because we can see she's wearing the same ear tags in both videos. That, and she screams, like, identically in both videos. But that makes sense. You know, it's the same sheep, so of course it's going to sound the same. You know how consistent a sheep's screams are these days. We're not really going to be looking a whole lot at these two videos, but they're going to be important later on, so just keep them in the back of your mind. Things were looking great for our girl. She was beloved by millions of people who all found joy in listening to the soothing sounds of her completely genuine sheep scream. Chapter 3. Seriously, why did we all think this was a goat? I wasn't able to find the original Reddit post that exploded Ophelia into stardom, but we do know a Reddit post did exist because it was mentioned in the Screaming Sheep NFT description. Okay. Apparently, a lot of old viral videos are now non-fungible tokens. I don't really want to get into that right now. If we instead just shift our focus to the NFT's description, we find a lot of useful information. Like, this is the only place I've found where we learn Ophelia's real name. I'm hoping it's accurate. Now, this might just be how I read things, but when I read This is Ophelia. I filmed The Screaming Sheep Easter morning. I was under the impression Ophelia was the name of the person recording, AJQ. Luckily, we have the Screaming Sheep 2's NFT description to clear things up. See, I told you those videos are going to be important later on. Ophelia, the sheep featured in the original, is also the star of this video. Oh, I get it now. This is Ophelia. Like you're pointing at her. This is Ophelia.
Hi, Ophelia.
Anyways, getting back to that uncredited Reddit post, I was able to find this Reddit post from September 7th, 2012, but I have reasons to believe it still wasn't the Reddit post. However, this post does give us some valuable insight into what a viral Ophelia Reddit post may have looked like. Already, there were a surprising amount of people who were commenting things like, oh, take my upvote, kind stranger. Hey, you know what this video reminds me of? A different screaming goat video! Since there had already been a precedent of goats being the common barn animal that made weird, unnatural screams, and because Ophelia had the most goat-looking haircut that day, that if someone told you, this is a goat, you would believe them unquestionably, because why would someone lie about that? Turns out, people lied about it. Ophelia's video was featured in multiple and extremely popular goat screaming like people compilations. And I can't really blame the people who made these compilations because they couldn't make a whole separate sheep scream like people compilation. I've only found one other video of a sheep screaming that wasn't on AJQ's channel. And that's not enough to make a whole compilation. Misinformation about Ophelia's species was rampant. No one had an NFT description to fact check because honestly, the concept of that is kind of insane. They just had to trust reputable news sources like Anderson Cooper to get his facts right. And even he couldn't do that!
Now, I've seen a lot of creepy goats on YouTube, like this one.
Chapter 4. I knew you were trouble. In February 2013, the YouTube user Goosick had the brilliant idea of editing Ophelia's scream over a popular Taylor Swift song. Huh, don't you wish you thought of something like that, AJQ? Replacing the audio of something with a goofier and unexpected sound? People are so creative. I wish I could show you the specific edit that I'm talking about, but I know Miss Swift won't like it if I play even a second of her song, so we're just gonna have to do this. Never mind, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to assume you've already seen the edit that I'm talking about because it was viewed by everyone. Everyone saw this edit. Taylor Swift saw this edit, and she liked it.
It's good.
I know I don't usually tell stories about my personal life, but if you'll allow me this one time, I remember one night in 2013 being at a high school dance, and the Taylor Swift goat song came on, and right when the beat dropped, all the teachers supervising hadn't a clue why the entire school screamed. It was because we were all mimicking that hilarious screaming sheep. Now, the issue with all of this is that Goosick titled their video, I Knew You Were a Goat When You Walked In. So history's changed forever. February 2013 was the start of the screaming goat meme. During this time, there were plenty of real videos of real goats making real screams that were also shared and beloved by people. But there's no denying that Ophelia's scream was the goat of goat screams. And she's not even a goat! YouTubers react to goat remixes! Commercials featuring screaming goats! Hey, what animal did they get in YouTube Rewind 2013 to scream? Oh, that's right, it was the goat. As much as AJQ tried to remind people of Ophelia's species in the description, the damage was already done, and the meme had gone completely out of their control. You might think that, like any other meme, people would have their fun with it, but eventually they'd move on. But that didn't happen with this particular meme. No, Ophelia's goat scream was about to find a new home in Hollywood. In November 2014, something happened that caused people's interest in screaming goats to massively spike up. And I have no clue what caused that. I don't know. It's one of those unsolvable mysteries, I suppose. Look, in all of my research, I couldn't find anything significant that would have caused this massive spike. So think back. Did you ever use Google to search for screaming goats in November 2014? And if so, why?
But while we're looking at the Google Trends graph, only 3 months later, we see another bigger peak in interest at February 2015. And I think I know what caused that. If I had to pick the most important date in Screaming Goat history, February 1st, 2015 would be like in the top five. Solid A tier for sure. On that specific Sunday, three different companies all released commercials referencing Screaming Goats. How did I know it was Sunday? Because it was Super Bowl Sunday, baby! You know, the season finale of football that gets around 114 million viewers. It's such an important football game that companies will pay top dollar for a couple seconds of ad space. And the 2015 Super Bowl, Super Bowl Xlix, aired two Screaming Goat commercials. One of them just using the original clip of Ophelia, which I'm still counting as a Screaming Goat commercial because the iSpot.tv page for this ad credits Ophelia as a goat. And that third non-Super Bowl commercial was just part of a Geico campaign, and they played a different ad from that campaign at the Super Bowl, but could you imagine if they played the goat one instead? That would have been so cool. Now, a new and bigger audience of people, people who watch sports, all believe that goats are the ones who scream like that. The reason this Super Bowl is so important to the Screaming Goat historian community is because this was the game that every animation studio executive watched and simultaneously agreed that Screaming Goats were the funniest, freshest thing ever. Think about it. You're an animation studio executive. You see two Screaming Goat commercials during the same football game. A couple days later, you see a third Screaming Goat commercial. Hey, isn't it almost Chinese New Year? What animal is it this time? Oh, that would be the year of the goat! Within the next three-ish years, Screaming Goats were referenced in animated movies at a rate I've never seen memes get referenced in animated movies before. You couldn't escape Screaming Goats if you tried. Thor 4 beat you over the head with them, and they might be in Marvel Rivals, but I couldn't get these goats to scream when I played.
Come on, scream! Scream!
My theory is that people complained about it, so they took it out, but now I'm gonna complain about it for them to put it back in. And it really gets my goat that goats are remembered as the common barn animal who make that iconic scream, and it's unfair that calling someone a goat is a compliment, but calling someone a sheep is an insult! Goats have already taken enough from sheep! I need to calm down. So, what do you say, Ophelia? Think you can belt one more out for us? For old time's sake? Come on, girl. Do the scream!
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Ophelia, why aren't you screaming? You were the one who screamed in the original video, right?
Yeah.
Chapter 6, working title, Deception. I'm not proud to admit this, but sometimes I'll watch a video at 2x speed. You know, like an iPad kid. But then YouTube will remember I did that and think I want to watch every video that fast. So it wasn't that jarring when I pulled up the original video and noticed Ophelia was obviously sped up. It's only became jarring when I realized the video was playing at the normal speed. I caught this on, like, my 40th rewatch, but this is clearly sped up, right? I didn't do anything to this. This is how the clip has always been. So that means, at some point, this video was put into a video editing software and underwent video manipulation. But that doesn't automatically mean Ophelia didn't hilariously scream. AJ just wanted us to hear the scream sooner. That's why they sped up the footage. And, okay, I will admit that it is a little weird that at the start of the video we can hear the background noises like the wind and other farm animals. But when Ophelia starts screaming, everything kind of just cuts out. But that's probably just because Ophelia screamed so loudly that it drowned out all the background noise. I don't know what a spectrogram is, and all right, I do find it intriguing that Ophelia's scream sounds identical to the scream this cartoon fox made in the short film Pop by Bernard Dairyman. That came out 2 years before AJ's video. But maybe Bernard just used a recording of his own Oxford sheep. You know how similar a sheep's screams are these days.
I, for one, would never accuse AJQ of faking this important piece of history that has brought joy to millions of...
What's that? They already found the source of the original scream? Stock sound effect from Apple released in 2008?
Yeah, can I call you back?
So that means it was never a screaming goat. It's always been a silent sheep. A classic example of a lie within a lie. I, of course, was not the first person to crack this case. People were suspicious of Ophelia's authenticity within the first 5 YouTube comments. No, the diligent internet detective who cracked this case and found the original scream was none other than...
Well, I'm sorry to burst the bubble, children, but those are sound effects.
So now he's involved in all of this. He's gonna need his own page on the wiki. If this is how you found out that one screaming goat video from 2012 is fake, I'm sorry. I know getting lied to is upsetting, but try imagining what it would feel like if everyone thought you were a goat when really you were a sheep. You know what else is fake? Most of the things on the internet. But you know what's not fake? The smiles Ophelia gave you. If AJQ told us from the very beginning that the video was edited,
why can't I say that?
Would we have even listened to them? We didn't listen the whole time they told us Ophelia was a sheep.
I don't think I could sum up my thoughts any better than the YouTube user Just Bored puts it. No shit's fake. This is just supposed to be funny. So the next time you inevitably see a screaming goat referenced in an animated movie, I hope you cringe, not because the joke isn't funny, but because you know it was never a goat that made that sound, but rather a sheep that also never made that sound.
Chapter 7. Other things I wanted to mention but couldn't find a good spot for them, so I'm just gonna list them off while opening Screaming Goat merch. In YouTube Rewind 2013, they got goats to reference Ophelia's sheep scream, but they also had a goat make this sound, which is referencing a different viral video called Yeah Lamb.
Yeah.
So in YouTube Rewind 2013, they had goats steal the spotlight from not only sheep, but also lambs. You're how old? Oh my god, it moves. The very first screaming goat reference in media I could find was on May 9th, 2015 from episode 25 of Sonic Boom. In case you needed an emergency goat. Ooh, what's in my hand? And then there's also this one. Have you ever made this sound? We have the screaming goat button. That needs batteries. Wait, no, I just need to pull this. That was anticlimactic. Oh, wait, I need to turn it on. Okay, now...
Star, can you do the honors?
The Screaming Sheep 1 NFT was sold at 2.9 Ethereum, which I believed influenced AJQ to sell the Screaming Sheep 2 NFT at 10 times the price, starting the bid at 29 Ethereum. And if you think it's crazy, someone would pay 10 times the amount for a viral... I can't read the card. If you think it's crazy that someone would spend 10 times as much on a sequel to a viral video, then you're absolutely right, because no one bought the NFT. Except for right now, you're looking at the proud owner of the Screaming Sheep 2 NFT. And I'm just kidding, I didn't do that. I said screening.
I'm here with Scout, the mother of Star from Party Goats LA.
Have you heard of a goat make that sound before?
I have heard something similar, like if they're okay. In distress, especially if they get left alone. Mm-hmm. Here's a fun fact for you. The way you can tell the difference between a goat and a sheep is actually by looking at their upper lip. Ooh. Goat's upper lip is not split. The sheep's upper lip is split, and that helps them eat grasses. And it's actually called the philtrum, but goats don't have it. So if you ever have a question, just look at their upper lip, and if it's split and it looks like it's just kind of a cleft right there, right under their nose, that's how you can tell the difference.
Star, what do you think?
We are Party Goats LA. We do all kinds of things, everything goat and sheep related here in Los Angeles. We do brush clearance, parties, events, send a surprise goat with our goat gram, goat yoga, hiking with goats, pretty much anything people want to do.
Hey, thanks for watching this video. Big thanks to everyone who worked on this video and made it possible. They're amazing. And you're amazing. And now you're off into the world, knowing that it was never a goat that made that sound. So, you know, take with that with what you will. See you around. Wear your seatbelt. Love yourself. Have a good night.
The very first comic I drew was this fan-made Garfield comic that I did when I was like 9. This was the Garfield comic that came out when I was born. Okay, back to Twilight.
Hello?
James, we found it.
What? What did you find?
The Garfield comic, man.
So remember how I said the first comic I made was a Garfield comic? Of course you remember. I just showed you a clip of it. So apparently my mom kept it. That just amazes me. I need to call her. Hold on.
Hello?
Hey, Mom. I just want to say that you have a hoarding problem. Like, seriously, you need to throw some stuff away once in a while. Okay, bye. Man, I love her. Did you know the creator of Garfield, Jim Davis, is 70 freaking years old? And he's still making Garfield? How do you even... And he's made 14,000 comics? Oh, he has co-artists and he doesn't even draw them anymore. Well, I just lost a bit of respect for my hero. If you guys wanted to start reading Garfield, you have a lot of catching up to do. So you know I love Garfield. It was a big inspiration to me. So much so that the very first comic I ever made was about Garfield. And I know in the video I said that I made it when I was like 9. But looking back at this, I want to say that I was like 6 months old. It's that bad. So, everyone shut up, and without further ado, this is the very first comic I made. Okay, let me explain some stuff. Let's go over this panel by panel. See how there's a graphic in this corner here? Well, Jim would make a unique graphic on every Sunday comic. So this is a Sunday comic, everyone. That means it's in color. Orange is a color. So the first panel, there's Odie, Garfield, and John. And John is saying, "Happy birthday! It's Garfield's birthday!" And they're about to eat this physically impossible-looking cake. So there's this running joke in the Garfield comic that Garfield hates his birthday because he's getting way older. He's in his late 30s now! Jeez! So keep that in mind, because in the next panel... Wah! You might not be able to tell from the comic, but that's the sound of a fire truck pulling up. Because in panel number 3, there's firefighters saying, "Where's the fire?" And you know they're firefighters because this guy's holding a fire hose. That's a hose, okay? I was 6, you perverts! I just want to point out that I spelled fire like how it should be spelled. F-I-R. Really, this is the wrong way if you think about it. Fiery. In case you didn't get the joke, there's so many candles on Garfield's cake that it was enough to warrant a visit from the firemen, because Garfield is so old and he just has a bunch of candles on his cake. And then in the next panel, John explains to the fireman that there was nothing to worry about. My cat just having a B-day. Garfield's still confused, though. And then in the next panel, the cake is falling apart as we speak, and we hear another sound effect. It's beep, beep. Now, if we follow the speech bubble, we can clearly see that the sound is coming from the ceiling. John already knows what's happening because he says, "Oh no." And then in a brand new color, blue, it starts raining on them. It was the sprinkler from above. John runs away going, "Ah!" You know, something similar happened with sprinklers in the Incredibles movie. Oh shoot, I gotta call it The Incredibles 1 in case you're watching this after June 2019. So if I got inspiration from The Incredibles 1, which came out in 2004, that would mean I would be a minimum of 8 years old. So maybe I did make this comic when I was 9. That is, I'm assuming I stole that joke from The Incredibles movie, which I wouldn't put past myself. Alright guys, what if I told you there was a second Garfield comic that I made? I'm a little hesitant to show you because, I don't know what's going on in this one. So let's look at it and see if we can figure it out together. So it starts with a Garfield graphic. It's another Sunday comic. It doesn't seem as excited as the other one, though. Then in panel 1, we see... What is that? I think that's a toothbrush and that's toothpaste. And it says Teth on it. Okay, panel 2. John walks up to said Teth brush and Teth paste. And then he says, "They say you should use to pee big tooth past." I was in honor classes, you know. Then it looks like he's about to brush his teeth with a massive teeth brush, and then, "Garfield, that's not pee, sis." And then, I don't even know. I don't know what that is. And then, there's 2? And one's green? And then we see Garfield say, "Yes, it is." So, like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do. Actually, let's make it a prime $23. So $23 to anyone who can decipher this. I will be taking your guesses on Twitter and in the YouTube comments, and I will give out the $23 to whichever explanation I think explains the comic the best. So not necessarily the first person to get it will get the $23, just whichever one I see first. As some of you may know, Jaden has already made a video about the Scruple Showdown tour me, her, Domix, Ross, and Aaron went on in 2019. But we toured again, baby, last November! We were scheduled to go earlier, but then something came up. For this round of touring, we did more than double the amount of shows than last time, so that means this video will be twice as good as Jaden's. So, touring during a global pandemic was a lot of fun. Anytime we had a day off, everyone on the crew had to take a rapid test, and people coming to the shows needed a proof of vaccine to get inside, and worst of all, we weren't able to say hi to people after the show. I know a lot of people waited outside in the cold for us to come out, only to see us at a distance load ourselves into the bus in our PJs, going, "Sorry! We're not allowed! We have to stay in our bubble!" Before the tour even started, we had a big problem. Domix couldn't get his Canadian visa approved to come work in the US, so he was unable to tour with us. But luckily, we found a sub for Dom, someone who loved maple syrup just as much as Dom and was willing to drop everything and tour with us for a whole month, Emily from the channel Emmerichu. And she killed it on stage, like straight up murder. She was super funny, artistic, and she drew these awesome pictures of all of us and just... I'm not crying, shut up! When Ross met Emily, the very first thing he said to her was, "Hello, touring's going to be so fun. Just don't sleep the wrong way on the bus, because if it crashes, you'll break your neck and die painfully. Also, you're not allowed to poop on the bus." I would know. Fortunately, no one pooped or broke their neck during the whole tour. And I still haven't pooped. Your body adapts to crazy things. During the last tour, Ross couldn't control his bowels, but this time he couldn't control his brain. He had what he describes as intense, debilitating nightmares that felt like a Nintendo 64 rumble pack was added to the experience. And if you want to hear more about what Ross's twisted mind thought up of when he was unconscious, then go check out the video he made on his channel. But not now, because I'm talking. So, on this tour, I wanted to be better at taking photos. You know, the reason I don't have a vlogging channel is because I forget to film anything that happens on my trips. And as I was taking a photo of a venue, I found out that my phone could do something called Photosphere. Photospheres are full 360-degree photos that show you everything at every angle. Here's a picture of the venue, and here's what the ground looked like. They're the superior way of taking photos. I took a photosphere of every venue. Hey, you know what else is round and cool? That's a great question. It's the type of question we got asked in our VIP Q&A panel. Before every show, the five of us would go out and do a Q&A panel for the people who bought VIP tickets. And 93.75% of the Q&As were absolutely fine. One time, someone asked a question that was directed at their fiancé, and it was, "Will you marry me?" "Oh, I'm gonna take a photosphere of this. Hold on, you'll need to stay still for like 2 minutes." I wish that question was directed at me. I would have loved to kiss someone on tour. Anyways, one of the cues we got was a little odd. I'm not gonna tell you which show this was at, but it was in Florida, because of course it was. There was one guy in the audience wearing a suit who was reaching his hand so high up that his butt was out of his chair and he was visibly shaking with excitement. So given how urgent this guy was being, Aaron called on him, but now we know not to call on those types of people. You in the suit. The guy stands up screaming, "Yes! Thank you!" And he goes on a long-winded explanation saying, "Look, I'm 26 years old. I'm not getting any younger. I want to do what you do." Okay. What's your question? My question is that I want to make a bet with all of you that in 1 year I'm going to be up on stage with you performing at Scribble Showdown. I wanted to say, "I bet $1 million because we're not holding auditions." But instead I said, "I love your enthusiasm. That's great. But don't quantify your success into a certain time frame, because that's only going to set yourself up for failure. Especially on the internet, growing an audience takes time and luck. Nothing is ever guaranteed. And we told him good luck and started answering other cues. And then at the end of the Q&A, as we were walking off stage, the guy screamed out, "See you in a year!" And that made me upset because he didn't listen to anything I just said. To his credit, he'll definitely be remembered. Not in the way he wants to, but remembered. And he's coming on tour with us next year, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. Another fun fan interaction that happened was in the freezing state of Chicago. We arrived in Chicago a day early, so me and Emily decided to walk to The Bean. Now, I have been told that The Bean is not called The Bean, and the artist actually wants it to be called something else. So as we walked up to The Bean, I kept chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." I took some photospheres, and as we started to leave, we passed another group who were chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." And I thought, wow, those guys are annoying. But then they made eye contact with me through The Bean's reflection and were like, "Oh my God, are you James?" And I said, "Who?" And then someone saw Emily and said, "Oh my God, it's Jaden." And I started laughing, and I pointed to my Scribble Showdown jacket. "No, no, no, it's this one, not this one, this one." But I don't think they understood, because when we were taking a group photo, one of them said, "Jaden should go in front." And I said, "Yeah, Jaden, come over here." So on the last tour, Aaron had just gotten into Magic the Gathering, which is a card game I've been playing longer than him. Back then, I had to explain some of the rules and show him the pro gamer strats. But during 2019 to 2021, Aaron got really into Magic. He knows the name of every single card and what it does. Like, I'll pull a card from a pack and he'll be like, "Oh, nice, Branching Evolution. That's like a worse doubling season. But you could combo it with the Colossal Dreadmaw and the Truffle Mixer. No, the Truffle Mater and get Gary out in turn 5. Gary's what the community calls the Gray Apostle." What? At one of the venues we stayed at, I noticed that there was a random Two of Diamonds glued to the ceiling. So I says to Aaron, "Hey Aaron, say a card, any card." "Seven of Clubs." "No, lower." "Three of Clubs." "Lower." "Two of Clubs." "Okay, now change the suit." "Two of Diamonds." "Now, you chose that card, right?"
"Okay."
"Look up." "What?" But then Aaron bought a deck of playing cards and performed a card trick that forced someone to pick the Two of Diamonds, and then Aaron would tell them to look up saying, "Is that your card?" "What?" And because of that, Aaron started to learn other card tricks and would try them out on people. So I don't want to take any credit for Aaron's hobbies, but I totally got him into Magic, and I got him into Magic. While we were on tour, we got invited to be a part of Jacksepticeye's hashtag ThankMiss livestream that was raising money to build homeless shelters. And on stream, Aaron had this crazy idea that if we reached our goal, he would kiss one of us. And then we reached our goal, and then nothing notable happened. If this show sounds like a lot of fun and you want to come see all of us play drawing games live, and you live in Europe, then great news! We have a Europe tour scheduled for April. Get your tickets on the Scribble Showdown website, and next time we plan on touring in the States again, I'll let you know. But for now, thank you everyone who came to a show, unless you live in Brooklyn. Thank you all for watching, and thank you everyone on the Real Good Touring team who babysat us for a month and made this show possible. Touring with you was a blast. And now, I'm going back to sleep on my tour bus coffin, facing the correct way while repressing my urge to poop. And golly, I sure do hope I don't get any nightmares. Right, bunk buddy Ross? Ross?
I haven't slept in 11 days.
All right, James. Are you ready for this
I was going to say, that's only happening one time.
Down! I'm crazy! Hey, if you're watching this and it's late at night and you have school tomorrow, I'm sorry. Top 10 things that keep me awake at night. Number 10, eating all those sugary snacks before my bedtime. My blood sugar goes through the roof. Sorry, I just can't help myself. I love a good cookie dipped in hot chocolate. Number 9, death and existentialism. Just the thought that one day me and everyone I love will die, and in just 500 years, no one is going to remember me. So what's the point of doing anything? In the grand scheme of the universe, do I even matter? Unless the internet's still around by then. Thumbs up if you're watching this in the year 2516. And also, don't forget me.
Number 8, my dogs!
My dogs just love to sleep on my bed every night. And you see, I sleep on a twin-size bed, which is a stupid name for a bed that can fit one person. And I'm actually a twin, so I'm allowed to sleep on those. And I'm not on the below-average side of the height spectrum, so I cover about 110% of the bed. And if me and my dogs are both cognitive enough to plan something out, maybe we could set up a system. I mean, they're pretty small dogs. I did the math. They should be able to fit. But my dogs have found that the most comfortable part of the bed is right dead center in the middle. So I just gotta finagle my way into a comfortable position, and if the dog leans up against you or sits on your leg, then you're obligated by dog law not to move, because you might disturb the dog, and you love them too much to do that. And my bed is right next to a window, so I sometimes open the blinds so they can look outside, and so they're both right next to my face. But then in the morning, if there's another person or, God forbid, another dog outside, then... Jeez, that was a long one. I just like talking about dogs. Number 7, there are as many creatures on your body as there are people on Earth. And you don't want to even know how many are living on your bed right now. Now, is this true? I don't know. I just saw it on one of those fun fact websites. Not too fun of a fact, I think. But not knowing whether or not it's true is even scarier. That means there are probably microorganisms dying on you every second. At least 12 of them have died on you since you started watching this video. But chances are that some of them are probably doing it on your kneecaps, on your eyelashes. Microorganism, more like micro-orgasm. Now, there's two ways you can look at this. One being that there's so many tiny creatures living on me, and no matter how hard I scrub, I'll never be clean. Or, you're never alone. Every night when you hop into that empty bed of yours, you're sleeping with billions of microorganisms. You slut. Number 6. They never caught the Zodiac Killer. I know he was around in the 70s, but if he was in his 20s in the 70s, that means he's only in his late 60s, early 70s right now. He can still be out there. Who knows what he could be doing? Maybe even failing at running for president. Ugh. And also, according to some conspiracy theories, they never caught John Wilkes Booth. Maybe Booth wants to get revenge. Maybe he's had enough and now he wants to run for president. Number 5. Fractals. What are those, you ask? Imagine you're a farmer and you have infinity fence posts to build a closed pen for your animals, and you have to use all the fence posts. And you think, well, first off, that's physically impossible. If I have infinity fence posts, then I can't use all of them because I'll always have more. Hey, well, you're complaining and theorizing over there? I just built your stupid pen and it looks like this. This is a fractal, children. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. What? What? Infinite perimeter? But I can see it. I can measure it. Oh no, shut up. You're not looking close enough. Let's zoom in. Basically, you can zoom up on this pattern forever. That's just what a fractal is. So since no matter how much you zoom up on this shape, it will always repeat itself. The perimeter of this shape, or the fence you use to make it, is infinite. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. Is the area of this shape infinite too? I don't know, ask Vsauce. Doesn't that blow your mind? Number 4, barcode scanners scan the white spaces in the barcode, not the black spaces. Number 3, looking on my phone for hours before I go to bed. How many times do you tell your friends over Skype, alright, I'm going to bed now, and then you go to your bed and you pull out your phone and mess around with it for an hour? And I've heard some studies saying, oh, looking at computer screens all day makes it harder for you to sleep, which is probably true. Why do I go on my phone every night? And the sad thing is I usually stop looking at my phone because my battery is going to die. I have a problem. Number 2, the universe is huge. Whoa, do you realize how big space is? Man, we are just a speck in the grand scheme of things. This is kind of getting back to my point that nothing really matters. Did you know that scientists have found a black hole that's 12 billion times larger than the sun? That black hole is about 1,800 light years long. You know, you probably could have lived your whole lives without knowing that. I'm sorry. Before we get to number 1, here are some honorable mentions. And the number 1 thing that keeps me awake at night is... YouTube is not a stable job. Because of how long it takes me to make a video, I can't really give my opinion on YouTube drama. Heck, I'm still working on my Fine Bros rant. So a lot of you probably know YouTube took away some creators' monetization on videos for not being advertiser-friendly, and they weren't even telling them about it. Now, I'm a pretty innocent PG-rated channel, so I didn't get affected by this new change at all. See you later, scrubs! But dang it, if this shows us anything, is that YouTube does not care too much at what's making their website profitable. What's stopping YouTube from saying, hey, we're gonna take 90% of your ad revenue and all your titles have to say YouTube is great in them. And yeah, if YouTube makes bad business decisions, then they'll be out of business. But so will I. So that keeps me awake at night. I almost lost a $1,000 scholarship because of plagiarism. Let's talk about that. Plagiarism. Adverb. The practice of taking someone else's work or ideas and passing them off as one's own. Just the word plagiarism sounds like a crime. Racism, sexism, and plagiarism. I'm not here to talk about people who repost my comics, JPEG'd, cut my name off, and have the audacity to put their own watermark on. Nah, not that kind of plagiarism. I'm gonna tell you about all the times that I plagiarized in school. And, okay, just off topic, I wanna address something publicly. I don't go looking through other people's comics and go, oh, this comic's funny, I'm gonna redraw it and pass it off as my own. No, I'm not about that life. But some of my comics have been very similar to other people's comics. I read a lot of comics, so it's possible I saw them and then repressed them in my memory and drew them again, or it's possible that it's all a coincidence and me and someone else just came up with the same idea. It happens all the time with other cartoonists, not just me. Again, I don't purposely take comic ideas and try and pass them off as my own. Whenever people point out that my comic is a lot like someone else's, I get really sad. So you guys should check out these other cartoonists, they're really good. Anyway, I just wanted to say that at the beginning of the video because I'm going to be telling you about times that I actually did plagiarize. But that was just in school, okay? I keep plagiarism off the internet. Isn't that right, Matthew? I cheated a bit in school. An occasional glance at my partner's desk, maybe jot down that important equation on my hand, nothing too big. I had a math class where we went to lunch in the middle of the class, and whenever we had tests, the teacher wouldn't split the test into two parts. Do you expect us not to exchange notes? The first time that I got caught cheating was in 9th grade. And if you stalk me and watch my old videos, you know that I went to a preparatory school my freshman year. And in preparatory school, the amount of work they gave you as kids was just stupid. So cut me some slack. In one class, we had to write an essay about something historical or something, and I chose to write about the Berlin Wall, specifically about people who escaped across the Berlin Wall. Now, I chose this topic because, I don't know if you know this, but there's a National Geographic documentary about this exact topic. So I didn't copy and paste anything into my essay, per se. It's just I told the exact same stories in the exact same order as the documentary, and, okay, I might have wrote some things down word for word. But at least I didn't plagiarize it from Wikipedia, okay? So I didn't copy and paste anything until I had to write the conclusion of the essay. And I found this article talking about it, and the article said some things that would have been perfect in my essay, so... Control-C, Control-V. I turned it in, I didn't think too much of it, but then when I got it back, the conclusion paragraph had been highlighted and a "see me" was written next to it. So I had gotten in trouble for plagiarizing the conclusion. Just the conclusion. Nothing else. To be honest, I kind of forgotten that I copied and pasted the conclusion. I thought he knew that I basically turned in a script of a documentary. The teacher, who we'll call Mr. Batman, it makes sense if you knew him, he took me outside of the classroom, he told me that it was bad that I plagiarized, and he called my parents that freaking snitch. My parents got mad at me too. He gave me a chance to rewrite the essay, and I remember just being so traumatized and stressed out that night, I kept thinking, what if he finds a documentary and sees that I practically plagiarized the whole essay? I ended up rewriting not only the conclusion, but the whole freaking essay. I turned in the new essay, and I don't think he ever found out that I copied the whole thing. Except, I did just admit it, and he watches my videos. Seriously, in April, he emailed me and asked if I was the same James that was in his class. He's the only teacher to ever reach out to me, and even after all those years, I still didn't tell him that I plagiarized the whole thing. So, hi, Mr. Batman. You can't change my grade now, can you? But that was a good experience for me to have. It taught me a valuable lesson, because I didn't plagiarize a single essay for the rest of high school. But then community college rolled around. I did community college for a bit because I couldn't afford university on a subway payroll. I took honors and AP classes in high school. I was a relatively good student, except I didn't take any of the AP tests. So when I went to community college, I had to take classes that were a step below the classes I took in high school. What a great way to spend my time! Senior year of English, we were writing essays analyzing poetry. Freshman year of college, we were writing movie reviews. And the teacher didn't even like me. She thought I was a slacker because I was never were paying attention. I didn't take community college seriously, but it was so easy, I was still getting amazing grades. On the third semester of community college, I took a public speaking class. Now, I might be an introvert, but I don't have a problem with public speaking. That's part of my job now. I took the class because it would be an easy A, and I needed a communications credit for my major. I wanted to be a math teacher, and you may not have noticed, but they publicly speak all the time. So I take the class, I'm like the best person in the class, right? And for the final, we had to give a persuasive speech in front of everyone. Oh, and by the way, I didn't learn, like, any tricks to help with public speaking. The whole class was literally just us giving speeches to each other over and over. So three semesters of doing easy classes and wasting my time, my apathy meters were just off the charts. I didn't want to work too hard, so I chose to do my speech on why we should get rid of the penny. And I don't know if you know this, but there's this YouTube video made by CGP Grey that makes great arguments on why we Americans should get rid of the penny. Again, I didn't copy and paste anything per se, it's just the speech I gave had the exact same arguments in the exact same order as CGP Grey. Okay, it was pretty much a one-for-one recreation of his whole video. I'm sorry, I thought we were getting graded on public speaking, not writing original speeches. The teacher caught me, I guess she's a fan of CGP Grey, and gave me a zero on the final. So I ended up getting a D in the class, and that was the worst grade I got in community college. Part of me was like, whatever. I don't care. This next semester, though, I wanted to go to a real college. And still trying to be economical, I found that it was actually cheaper for me to go to an out-of-state school than to go in-state. At this school, they gave scholarships to out-of-state students who had high enough GPAs and enough credits. It would have saved me thousands of dollars. And I had family living in this state, so that was another reason why I wanted to go to that school. But here's the thing. Even with that D, I still had a high enough GPA to get the scholarship, but since I failed, it didn't count as a credit, so I ended up being one credit short for what was required. Plagiarizing was going to cost me thousands of dollars. My options were either stay home and do a one credit semester of community college, or beg the university to give me my scholarship anyway. During Christmas, my family visited the state the school was in, so me and my dad got the chance to go to the school and basically talk our way into getting the scholarship. We talked to five different people, now that's public speaking. I had to use my persuasive talking skills that I would have learned. And all of them were telling us, there's nothing we can do. But we were talking to one lady, she was telling us the same thing about not being able to do anything. She looked at my transcript. She said, oh, you failed public speaking. She looked at it for a bit. She typed something on her computer. She printed out a piece of paper and handed it to me saying, it's okay, I'm not good at public speaking either.
She thought I was bad at public speaking! She thought I failed because I was insecure or something and not because I did something wrong.
I'm just terrible at speaking to the public.
So really, there was something you could do. I got the scholarship because a lady wearing a lot of eyeshadow took pity on me. But I only ended up staying a semester and a half at that school because my YouTube kicked off, and now I'm doing that full time. But I'm still thankful I got the scholarship. I hope my public speaking teacher could see where I am now. I speak in front of millions of people for my job. I mean, I can't see them and I'm just reading everything off a script in my closet. And I didn't get punished for plagiarism. I didn't learn my lesson. And I didn't learn anything in your class. Hey, England! For the entirety of this video, I'm going to be calling this sport football and this sport soccer, okay? Well, blimey, mate, we got a cheeky bugger here. We do. Well, pip-pop cheerio, hope a stiffy wank shanakas. God save the queen. What did I just say? So, the theme of this video, sports. Either you love them or you hate them. Or you have some other third opinion. Growing up, my family was never big on sports. We never watched any games on the telly. I'm sorry, I still got some British in me. And me and my dad never went out and played catch. He also never taught me how to shave. He was gone a lot. He always talked about Heather. Okay, but I did play soccer for a couple years when I was like 7. I was on the green team. Sports at that age aren't even like sports. It's just parents wanting you to go outside more. Being a goalie on a soccer team when you're that age is super stressful. The whole team is counting on you. Even stopping a ball that's gently rolled towards you is difficult. One time, the other team we were playing was so sucky that all the players spent the whole game on their half of the field, and I was the goalie for my team, and I remember just sitting down and picking at the grass. Soccer was the only sport that I've been on a team for. Well, I mean, I'm not counting the track team that I was on for only 2 days. There was this kid I mentioned a long time ago in my Boy Scout video named Micah. Now, he was a soccer fanatic. I wonder what he's doing. Okay, England, we have this holiday called Thanksgiving. We celebrate it because it's when we left your lame country. Don't ask what we did next. So on Thanksgiving, for some reason, it's a tradition to play football before you go and eat food. So while the ladies stay inside and cook the meal, the men go outside and throw the pigskin around. I'm just kidding, you guys. I'm not a sexist. But I mean, that is what happens. So one time during Thanksgiving, I was a little kid, like 11 or 12, and I was playing football with my dad and his other 40-year-old friends. So me being the littlest, I wasn't particularly the best player. But while we were playing, I freaking caught the ball. I caught it! And then I just started booking it across the field. I've probably never ran so quickly my entire life. And I actually made it. I scored a home run.
What?
And that, to me, was such a pivotal point in my life. I felt so accomplished. Me, a little kid, scored a goal against a bunch of adults. I would think back to it if I was ever feeling sad. Like, oh, I failed this math test, but, one time I scored a basket against a bunch of adults when I was 12. But I remember I was a senior in high school, and I was just driving, and then the thought came to me, they probably let me score that touchdown. They were going easy on me. Man, growing up sucks. I was never all that competitive as a child. Well, okay, I was never competitive when it came to sports.
It's just a game, guys. We're supposed to have fun. Winning's not that important.
Sports are good at that age, though. They promote physical activity, you can make friends, you might like the sport and want to pursue it more, and it's not a big deal if you suck. I'm totally making my future kid play a sport. That is, if I have kids. What if I die alone? People make the comparison that some people watch gaming channels for the same reason that others watch sports. You're watching someone play a video game? Why do you watch someone play when you can just go to the computer and play it yourself? Now replace the word video game with sport and outside with computer, and it's the same thing. Loading Artist made a very good comic about the point I'm trying to make. I'll just read it. What are you doing? Watching this guy play a game. It's pretty funny. Wait, so you aren't even playing? Yeesh, what a waste of time. And then he goes and watches a sports game. Man, Loading Artist is so much cooler than me. I've said this before, but he was such a big inspiration to me when I was first starting out. I just wanted to say that again. Go read all of his comics right now. I just want to say it's fine if you watch sports. Granted, I won't watch them with you because they're incredibly boring. You want to know why gaming channels work? It's because they play different games. Even Captain Sparkles, who mostly plays Minecraft and also who I love, by the way. And I did buy a t-shirt to prove my point, but it's still in the mail. See, look, I bought a t-shirt and I bought sunglasses right here. So I just want to give a big shout out to themakershop.com, who's taking a million years to ship me my Captain Sparkle shirt. It was going to be so cool. I was going to say, I bought a t-shirt to prove my point. And then I was going to flick the sunglasses that I also bought down. Notice me, senpai. This email says it's going to take 3 to 7 business days to ship. Well, yesterday was the 13th business day. So what is it, Jordan? 7 or 13? So I bought this just so I have something physical to show my love for Captain Sparkles. I've been watching all of his videos since TNT. Oh, he's changed it. But the point is, he changes around the format and the rules of his Let's Plays with all the different maps he plays. It's different for every video, even his role-playing ones, which I'm still waiting for part 5 to come out. Like, imagine if there was a gaming channel that only played the first Super Mario game. It might be fun to watch at first, especially if they're good at playing the game, and it might be fun to watch how other people play it and see what they do. But for 50 years? Don't you think that would get a little boring after a while? I mean, only so much can happen, and that's what I think sports is like sometimes. It's the same game, same rules, over and over and over. Like, spice some things up once in a while. What if for basketball there were like mystery boxes like in Mario Kart and you could grab them and that would give you an advantage? How about if a team is losing, they get some wacky, hilarious handicap depending on how far behind they are so it's not hopeless for them? But James, sports is supposed to measure your talent. Whatever. It gets boring to watch. I can understand if the teams are neck and neck and it comes down to one final play like what it does in every sports movie. That's why they have to use that plot device in all the sports movies to make it interesting. But a lot of times, sports aren't like that. Like if one team is leading by 50 points, why even bother watching the last 5 minutes of the game? I would rather watch any Air Bud movie than a sports game because stuff actually happens in those movies. And they're different each time. And there's a dog wearing shoes in it. I just want to say for the record, if my kid grew up to be a professional athlete, then I'll watch sports. But only the games that they play in, and only the games that are interesting. Ugh, why is it sociably acceptable to know everything about sports and dress up, but it isn't acceptable to dress up in fursuits and go to cons? You see, I don't think it's acceptable to do either of those things. You're both weird. But don't let me stop you. You do you. Follow your dreams. Okay, let's talk about some stories. In grade school, I was put in the honor classes for my academic achievement, which did not help me whatsoever. It probably hurt me when I went to college, but that's not what we're talking about. Anyway, so during recess, the whole class would play kickball. Kickball is a fun sport, anyone can play it, but it takes a pro to be good at it. What? There was this girl in my class who was the best kickball player, and then later, when she grew up, she became the valedictorian of my high school and went to Harvard. I'm proud of her. Also, my ginger friend and Nick Jiggly, who I've mentioned before, he also got to speak during graduation. Actually, okay, so Nick had this thing where his hands would shake. I don't think it was Parkinson's. I actually emailed him about it, and he said, I asked a doctor, and he said it's just a mild tremor. Ha. So he's probably fine. But whenever he would give a presentation in front of the class, his hands would be shaking, and people would think, oh, he's nervous. But no, actually, he's the most extroverted and outgoing kid that I knew. He just had a condition. Well, that was a pretty long tangent. What are we talking about? Sports? Oh, yeah, kickball. Since everyone in the class was kind of already a nerd, I wasn't usually the last one to be picked on a team. I was usually the fourth or third to last. It's so nerve-wracking when the last five are still standing and you think, don't let me be last, don't let me be last. And then you get picked and it's like, ha! They think I'm better than you. Which I'm not, actually. One time I think I was like 15 or something and me and this big group of people went to a sports complex. And we were having fun, playing games and running around. And then, boom! A soccer ball just whacked me in the face. I got a bloody nose and I couldn't stand up without toppling over for a few seconds. And then I went to a bathroom, you know, freshened up. What sucked was that it was a girl that hit me and people made jokes like, oh, you got hit by a girl. It still hurt, okay? So I sat out for a couple of minutes. I waited until I stopped seeing flashing colors. Then, like the man that I am, I went back and played some more. And not 5 minutes go by when it happened again. Different person this time. But after the second time, I was completely out. I mean, I wasn't unconscious, but I couldn't get up. I remember my brother had to carry me out on his shoulder. Suwaboy will always hold a special place in my empty heart. Not because I have fond memories working there, but because some of you really liked it when I talked about working there. And I made buckets with those videos compared to what I was making at Suwaboy, which was nice. Apparently, I was hashtag relatable enough to connect with millions of people, and it took my channel to where it is today. And then less than 2 weeks later, I made a part two to that video, and I struck an even bigger chord with people.
Who likes the sequel better than the original?
People think that I use the word Suwaboy in my videos so I wouldn't get sued. This is not true. I wasn't successful enough to get sued. They had other problems to deal with at the time. I called it Suwaboy for a joke. In my first video, I said, I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Suwaboy. I was making you think that I worked at an unknown place, and then I subverted your expectations by saying I worked at Suwaboy. But now, at this point in my career, I am calling my previous place of employment Suwaboy because I don't want to get subbed. The most requests I get for a video is Suwaboy Part 4, but I never really considered making another one because I don't work there anymore. I have no new stories to talk about the place. But something happened recently, and I do want to talk about it. You see, the Suwaboy I used to work at closed down, and I am so deeply upset at this news that the only way for me to cope is to make one last video about it. So this story happened a couple of years after I quit working at Suwaboy. I was behind on a video, so that meant I was in a mentally damaging mindset called crunch mode, and I had been working all day, and I started getting hungry, and I still hadn't taken Floof on a walk, so I decided to kill two birds with one stone and eat Floof. Just kidding, I decided to take Floof on a walk to my local Suwaboy. And before I entered the store, I picked up Floof and held her in my arms, because I'm not a psychopath. I know taking your dog into a restaurant is tacky and a health code violation, but this is a Suwaboy we're talking about. I know how laid back it is here. There are no rules or health codes. One time when I was working at my Suwaboy, this 10-year-old kid came in wearing a swimsuit and literally nothing else. And he was unsupervised. He didn't want a sandwich, all he wanted was a cookie, but this kid wasn't wearing shoes or a shirt, the two things you need to get service at a restaurant. So did I tell this shirtless delinquent to get lost? No, he had money, so I did business with him. I don't discriminate against shirtless people. Look, his mom was probably at the grocery store next door, and he just got done with swimming lessons, and he said something like, "Mother, I would be most grateful if you let me consume a pastry with high levels of sugar and simple carbohydrates." And his mom probably said, "Yeah, whatever, nerd. Go get something at Suwaboy." So the point of this story is to let you know that I was the kind of employee who, as long as you were willing to pay for your food, didn't care what you were wearing or what health code you were violating. This is a gosh darn Suwaboy. So I walk in with Floof, and it's completely empty, by the way. Seems like I'm the only one in this town that even likes Suwaboy. And the worker, aka the only other person in the store, said, "Is that a service animal?" Floop's not a service animal, unless the service you want is someone to chew up all your stuff and bark at everyone. But she still emotionally supports me when I tell her I'm gonna die alone. She tries to make me feel better by licking the inside of my nose. But I didn't want to lie to this guy about Floop's emotional support status, because if I said yes and he said prove it, I would be in trouble. So like the emotionally stable enough to not need a dog person that I am, I said, no. And he said, she can't be in here. If the health inspector came in, they would fire me on the spot. Which like, geez, dude, you're gonna let the health inspector treat you like that? Stand up for yourself once in a while. So I said, okay, I'll leave. Yeah, there are other restaurants in walking distance, Suabway guy. The ramen place lets me order with Floof in my arms all the time. I know this because I've already been there twice this week, and the only reason I'm even getting Suabway is because I don't want the ramen employees thinking that I'm a weird guy who brings my non-emotional support dog everywhere. You missed out, Suabway. Do you know who I am? I used to work here. And then the guy called my bluff. He said, wait, we can make it fast. As fast as Jimmy John's? This kid's standing up for himself. I'm proud of him. I knew exactly what to tell him. I want a foot-long ham sandwich on Italian bread with American cheese. I know that's the hardest cheese to pull apart with gloves on, but whatever. He sped run putting on the meat and cheese, and then he asked me, what kind of vegetables? And in my mind, I went, hold on, you didn't ask me if I wanted it toasted. I see what you're doing. You're trying to get this sandwich finished as quickly as possible, so you're not even going to ask me if I want it toasted and hope I forgot. Well, it's okay, because I didn't want it toasted, but I'm onto you. And then Floof jumped over the counter, peed on the olives, and bit the guy in the jugular. And then licked the inside of his nose. Some people take their job way too seriously. Well, at least some Suabway workers are more laid back like me. Like this one time not too long ago, I went back to the Suabway I used to work at, and I didn't recognize any of the people there. But someone did get recognized in that store. Me. One of the workers said, are you the guy that made the cartoon about working here? And I said, yeah. And then I decided to make his job interesting by telling him, hey kid, this is the place. What? This is where it all happened, kid. These floors are the very same floors that I used to mop. You missed a spot over there. And this kid lost all six of his olives. Okay, I don't use my fame to get into places I'm not supposed to. Usually. But this kid was so excited, and I used to work here, so I asked him, can I go in the back? Which is probably breaking a bajillion health code violations, but this kid didn't care, he let me in. It had been 3 years since I had been back there, and literally nothing had changed. I don't know if any of you have ever moved out of your parents' house, and then 3 years later you went back to visit and saw your childhood bedroom, but it was that sort of feeling. The chip boxes were still in the same place, inside the freezer all the food was pretty much where I left it, and the bulletin board had all the same papers. One of the papers was a list of all the employees with their names and phone numbers, and that list was so old that it still had all of my old coworkers' names and numbers, and it even had my own name and number still on the sheet. It had been crossed out, but I still went, ah! And I punched it out with a pencil. Maybe that's how my phone number got leaked. And then I thought, I wonder if the other number is still here. In the very back of the room, there was this desk, and I got down on the gross, unmopped floor, and I scooted underneath the desk, and oh my gosh, it's still here. When I used to work there, one of my coworkers found this store's Wi-Fi password and wrote it down on the bottom side of the desk so then everyone could watch Netflix instead of work. And the employee had no idea it was there, and he typed it into his phone, and it still worked. All right, don't tell people that I told you this, I said. We can't let anyone know this secret. But then the place closed down, so now no one can get in trouble. Anyways, I'm gonna miss that place. It was gross, and I didn't love working there, but in the end, it was the most memorable job I had as a teenager, as it was the only other job that I had. It formed a good work ethic, I made new friends, and I even got to eat free food sometimes. But now I might get sued for this video, so we'll see what happens. So now, every time I walk into Suabway with my non-service animal, a little part of me will be sad that my old Suabway is in ruins. Okay, maybe it's not in ruins, but they'll probably turn it into a nail salon or something. Nothing lasts forever, so it's time to give Suabway a proper burial. Me and my twin sister used to share a single Neopet account, which was a dumb decision because it was completely free to make a second Neopet account, and we already struggled at sharing things in the non-virtual world. But the reason we co-ran our Neopet account was because we didn't want to put our pets through a divorce, and because we wanted to save up our Neopoints for a paintbrush. For those of you who grew up with real video games, in Neopets, a paintbrush was a super rare item that would change your Neopet's appearance based off the paintbrush you used. There were Christmas paintbrushes, baby paintbrushes,
paintbrushes, Guy Fieri paintbrushes, and an invisible paintbrush that just turned your Neopet invisible. Why? When I said that paintbrushes were a rare item, I meant it. You see, your average Neopet paintbrush would sell for about 1 to 2 million Neopoints, and the most me and my sister had ever saved up was about 100,000. Why did you spend 3K on food? We're trying to get paintbrushes! It was Flower 67's birthday, and you spent 4K getting that stupid jacket! The jacket is cool, and you know it! One day, my sister went searching in the back alleys of the internet for other ways to obtain a paintbrush, and she stumbled upon this website that said, get free paintbrushes, and all she had to do was enter in her username and password, and they'd send us a fairy paintbrush. Ooh. And in a moment of desperation, she entered in the login details of our shared account into a shady website, and you'll never guess what happened next. We log into our account, and there were 3 fairy paintbrushes in our inventory, and just kidding, we got hacked. And we lost all 100,000 of our Neopoints, and we never got the paintbrush we were promised. But we learned a valuable lesson that day, which was, people will try to scam you, so trust no one. We were lucky enough to only lose virtual money, but some people aren't that lucky. On the internet, you have to deal with people trying to scam you constantly. There's probably comments underneath this very video of people using my name and profile picture saying, click on this link and get a free gift card, and they always use a stupid amount of emojis so their comment sticks out more. I thought it was obvious that those comments were fake, but some people still fall for them. Listen, we need to get one thing straight about our relationship. If I ever use this many emojis, I want you to shoot me. Scammers like to target non-tech-savvy people, or what I like to call babies and baby boomers. There's a lot of things you can do to help prevent people from taking advantage of you on the internet, but my rule of thumb is that if something sounds too good to be true, it is. No one's giving out free gift cards, your long-lost uncle didn't wire transfer you money, and you can't get free paintbrushes. You can't cheat the system, that's just life, man. Also, if you ever get a pop-up saying your computer has a virus, call this number to fix it. Don't. A guy with an Indian accent named Jason will charge you real money to fix the virus, but won't do anything. Because you never had a virus in the first place. But those are all illegal scams. People go to jail over those scams. Identity theft is not a joke, Jim. Millions of families suffer from it every year. However, there are some scams that are, for some unknown reason, completely legal. And frankly, I think we should reopen Alcatraz for the people who do these scams. So here's my list for the top 4 legal scams that shouldn't be legal. The first legal scam is mobile games. I was doing a show with this 9-year-old kid named Araya, and in the show he was gonna punch me like this. And one day while we were rehearsing, Araya asked me, can I play some games on your phone? So I gave him my phone and his dad told me, hey man, I don't even trust my kid with my phone. And I thought, what's the worst thing he can do besides tweet something or delete my YouTube channel? But he did something so much worse. He downloaded a free game, and inside the game, you could buy a VIP member version that gave you extra lives and more skins. The thing that was a scam was that the app gave you the VIP member free for 3 days, then charged you $6 a week. That's $1 a day, not including Thursdays, to play some stupid mobile game. It's more expensive than a Netflix subscription and a tasty hot and ready $5 Little Caesars pizza. Now, some of you might be thinking, okay, yeah, that's a ridiculous price for a mobile game, but that's not a scam. They tell you how much it's going to cost right there on the screen. But here's the thing. Roughly 0 people bought the VIP member pass because they were fans of the game and didn't mind the price. No one is willing to pay a weekly bill for a game where all you do is this. But 100% of the people who paid for the subscription are kids using their parents' phone and bought the VIP pass because they have no concept of money. And you don't even have to enter in your credit card information, so it's easier for kids just to hit the purchase 6,000 gems button. It's targeting kids, and I don't like it. Scam. I wish I had the confidence of a mobile game developer to charge someone $312 a year to play their stupid game. My proposal to fix this scam is to ban mobile games entirely and everyone play Tetris 99. Nintendo Online is cheaper than the VIP club subscription anyway. The second legal scam is college. Textbooks. We live in a society where all human knowledge and misconceptions are contained on the internet. But if you print out that knowledge and bind up the pages, suddenly you made a best-selling book that people are required to buy. There are some textbooks that are just a CD or a code that you need a computer to even access the book, so what's the point of buying the textbook if you have a computer that's connected to the internet in the first place? And don't tell me that the books are better for people that don't have internet. I know you have an internet connection, because... come on. My solution to this scam is to drop out and make YouTube videos. The third legal scam is psychics. I don't want to debate whether or not psychics are real, because they're not. My horoscope told me so. My belief is that no one can talk to dead people because we're not living in a cartoon. And it just makes me sick that there are psychics who are taking advantage of people who are grieving and are so desperate to talk to their loved ones again that they'll try anything, even paying people to lie to them. Ooh, I burned my finger on that hot take. Now, I don't think that every psychic out there is trying to scam people. Most of them are. But I do think there are some psychics who legitimately believe that dead people use them as a vessel to talk to their living relatives. And in their three eyes, they are helping and giving their clients closure. I understand that a very small percentage of them are just trying to help. But it doesn't matter because they're all fake. My solution to this scam is that you don't pay a psychic unless they can guess how much money you're going to pay them. Should be close to zero, hopefully. And the last legal scam is multi-channel networks. Wait, do you guys hear that? It sounds like bridges being burned. When your YouTube channel starts growing, you'll get contacted by a multi-channel network, or MCN, and they'll make empty promises that if you join their network, they can help your channel grow and earn more money. And they'll brag about how many people are in their network, when really that just means there's less of a chance they'll care about you. And all you have to do to join is give them a percentage of your YouTube money every month. And once you sign your soul away, what a network will actually do is nothing. Except take a cut of your money every month. It's like showing your dog a tennis ball and then pretending to throw it, and then when the dog realizes he's chasing nothing, he's already signed a 3-year contract to keep chasing the fake ball. I know this last scam might not apply to everyone watching, but if this video helps at least one up-and-coming YouTuber to not join an MCN, then it will have been worth it. So that's my list for the top 4 legal scams that should... not exist and die. I don't think this video is going to actually change anything. People will always be greedy and try and get money any way they can. So if there's anything you should take away from this video, is that I'm giving away free gift cards! Click the link in the description to claim your prize! Good morning, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my list of the top 4 legal scams that should be illegal. If there's any psychics in the audience that I offended, you should have known before watching this video that I don't agree with you. And if there's any MCNs watching this video, please stop emailing me. So I'm really excited to announce some Halloween merch, which includes a freaking Halloween costume. I know it's August, but I don't really get a lot of chances to update you guys on things, so we're doing it now. If you want to get your hands on a costume, you should order it soon, because we only ordered a certain amount of costumes, so once they sell out, they won't be ready until next year. If you have any questions about the sizing or the shipping, then be sure to ask my business email. Thank you for watching this video and sticking around to listen to the end card. I know a lot of people click off once the end card starts, but at least you're cool. A big thanks to everyone who worked on this video, and until next time, wear your seatbelt.
I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry.
Hey, James!
Hey! Furby?
Everyone's gonna put on $2,000 animal costumes and... walk around. Do you want to come?
No. But don't let me stop you from this hobby of yours. I may not understand why you like it, but as long as you're not harassing or hurting anyone, or anything, then do whatever makes you happy. Also, shower regularly and eat your vegetables. So, in the last video, I made a haha joke about being a furry. I said, given the choice between an animal with fur and one without fur, that most people would think the animal covered in fur would be cuter. And, ha, if we applied that logic to people, then everyone would be a furry. I got a mixed bag of responses to that joke.
Okay, I was looking at all the comments about James saying he's a furry, and in my opinion, it shouldn't matter. If James is a furry and he told you, that means he trusts you and thinks that you would accept him the way he is.
I don't care, I'm not watching him anymore.
Well, that's really nice of you, Mr. Branch. But I still don't trust you. A lot of people were confused, so for the remainder of this video, every time I make a joke, it will be followed by this message. Two muffins are in an oven. One says, "Boy, it's hot in here." And the other says, "Yeah, you live in Arizona, what'd you expect?" Bye.
But I'd say for the most part, you guys were very accepting. So that's good to know if I ever do want to come out as something.
But if we wanted to talk about someone who is a furry, then look no further than 600 BC. You have to look pretty far.
What am I talking about? I'm talking about this man named Aesop. Aesop. Aesap.
Aesuabwe. This man was the world's first furry. Okay, I'm calling him a furry because he wrote a lot of fables with talking animals in them, so I'm making fun of him for writing a lot of furry fanfiction.
I'm making fun of a dead person.
I made a video about a year and a half ago reading some of Aesop's fables, and that video is what this official Odd Ones Out shirt is referencing. Fables are short stories, usually with talking animals, that have a moral at the end. Characters in fables don't have names. They're just simple, cookie-cutter characters.
You don't have a fable with Michelangelo and Raphael from the Ninja Turtles. No, you have a fable with the tortoise and the other tortoise.
So I'm going to read some more of Aesop's fables, but I'll be focusing on just one character. The fox. The fox gets around. You could pick any animal, and a fable exists with that animal being taken advantage of by a fox. The fox and the Triceratops. That fable probably exists. With the amount of fables the fox has been in, you'd expect him to be more moral than Gandhi. Aesop really liked foxes. His persona was probably a fox.
The fox and the goat.
So once there was this fox eating some cheese, he wasn't looking where he was going, and he fell down a well. The fox had no way of getting out. Then a goat just so happened to be walking by and said, "Hey, what are you doing down there, you silly goose?" "Actually, I'm a fox," said the fox. "I was just drinking some of this lovely water. Is it good?" "Oh, it's only the best water in the entire universe." So the goat decided to jump down and join the fox. But then the fox used the goat. He used her as a stepping stool to get out of the well.
The website I'm reading this from has an interactive picture that shows the events that happened. Let's watch.
So then the goat says, "Whoa, buckaroo, aren't you going to help me out?"
"No.
Instead, I'm going to teach you a moral. If you had as much sense as you have beard, you would have been more cautious about finding a way to get out again before you jumped in. Look before you leap, you stupid idiot." Okay, goodbye. "But fox, you fell into the well too. You were the one not looking. The goat looked, you just lied to her. And you got away with it. So the real moral of the story is, you can abuse the people in your life with no consequences, as long as they end up dead in a well." The fox and the crab. This fable is pretty short. Once there was a crab who was tired of living next to sand, so he decided to move to a meadow.
And then a fox ate him.
That's the real fable! It counted as one of Aesop's 665. And the moral is, be content with your lot. Don't move, don't travel, don't try and live in a better location because a fox might eat you! Just live in your studio apartment and deal with it! The lion, the bear, and the fox. This baby goat, he's a kid, went up to a lion and a bear and said, "Have you seen my mom? I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks. She said she was going to get some water and a pack of smokes, and she hasn't come home." But the bear and the lion didn't care. They started fighting each other over who would get to eat the baby goat. And then a fox jumped out of the bushes, killed the kid, and ran off with it. I wonder how much Aesop got paid for these. Again, the website has a very nifty interactive picture that shows you exactly what occurred. And the moral of the story? Those who have all the toil do not always get the profit. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Seems to me the moral should be, don't talk to lions and bears, and watch out for foxes. The fox and the grapes. Basically what happens in this fable was that once there were some grapes growing on a really tall tree. Do grapes grow on really tall trees? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And the fox really wanted some of the grapes. Do foxes like grapes? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And so he tried to get them himself, but he couldn't reach them. And since the fox didn't want to ask for help, probably because all the other animals hated him, he said, "Eh, I didn't want your sour grapes anyway." There are many who pretend to despise and belittle that which is beyond their reach. Which is where I think the phrase, money is the root of all evil, came from. People were upset that they couldn't get money, so they just said, "Eh, I didn't want your evil money anyway." Okay, here's the last fable. This one's kinda sad. The fox and the scorpion. So the fox, this whole time, had been gathering ingredients to make the perfect sandwich. He got the meat from an orphaned goat, a sautéed depressed crab, and some cheese. He was also going to get a side of grapes, but he decided to go without them.
When all of a sudden, a scorpion comes up to him and said, "Hey, can I get a ride across the river? I'm too small to swim across."
"Ha! Nice try, Slick!
If I gave you a ride, you'd just sting me.
No, if I did that, we'd both drown. It would be a lose-lose.
All right, I'll help you out. I've been acting like a huge jerk lately, all to make this one sandwich. But I'm gonna change starting now. For once, I'm gonna be helpful. So the fox gives the scorpion a ride, when all of a sudden... Why'd you sting me?
Because I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature.
Yeah, but you're a talking scorpion. I thought you'd have enough cognitive sense to know not to do that. You even said yourself that if you stung me, we'd both die.
Actually, I can hold my breath for 6 days.
What?
Yeah, watch.
My sandwich.
And then the fox died. He had no family, no friends, and no sandwich. And that's why you never help scorpions.
Lied to you guys. I pranked you. This fable wasn't the fox and the scorpion. It's actually the frog and the scorpion. The fox never got stung. He knows better than to help out another creature. Fox is too busy looking out for number one, baby. The frog's dead, though. And if it makes you happy, the scorpion died, too. And the fox got to enjoy his sandwich. Still alone, but... The end. Man, what a plot twist. Aren't I so good at telling stories? So what did we learn, children? We learned, don't ask for help. Don't help out others. Lie to people, take what you want, and you'll succeed.
Okay, so I'm just going to get right into the meat of this topic. I love reading fables. If you weren't paying attention in 10th grade English, a fable is a short story, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end of them. A good way to remember is that the word fable starts with an F, and so does furries. So, some examples of a fable you might have heard are the tortoise and the hare, Humpty Dumpty, Pacific Rim, and the autobiography of Hillary Clinton. This one's a fable because the main character is a bitch. I'm just kidding. Humpty Dumpty's not a fable. So there's this guy named Aesop, and he's best known for creating a bunch of fables. He's written over 655, and seriously, I don't know why for some reason we can't find the exact number. How many fables has he written? Over 655! Oh, so... 656? Like, what's the range here? Unfortunately, he has died, so we won't be writing any more fables. So why can't we get the exact number? Like, what the heck, guys? And he also had a very strong no-photo policy, so no pictures of him were ever taken. Because he was born around 500 BC. I don't even think he knew what a camera was, so... Here we go, this is what he supposedly looked like. And what I like most about fables is that the wording is so... like Shakespearean and old-timey, and it makes you feel like you're smart for reading these short paragraph-long stories. And even better, they have a moral at the end of them, so once you're done reading, you're like, oh man, that was deep. Like, every single fable can end with one character dropping a microphone. Like, the whole story is just build-up to that one moral moment. Okay, so I'm going to read some of my favorite fables to you guys. I'm not going to read them how Aesop wrote them, though, because he had so many unnecessary smart-sounding words when really all of his fables could be shortened down to, like, 3 sentences. So here we go. Aesop's fables in my own words.
Belling the cat.
So there's these mice that get together, and they're trying to come up with a plan to get this cat to stop killing them. And one mouse is like, oh, we could put a bell around the cat, you know, so now we could hear it or something. And this other mouse is like, yeah, all right, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Who's going to put the bell on? Okay, so this one's kind of actually stupid. I don't really know what the moral is. Like, maybe no one wants to be the person to sacrifice themselves for the good of humanity or my sanity or... Okay, here's my version of the rest of that story. So after the mouse said that, the other mouse goes, oh, geez, other mouse, you're right. I didn't think of that. Well, I guess I say we all grab our toothpicks and kill the cat. You know, at least that ending made sense. A bell? Pfft. How about you poison it? Or, like, move somewhere where there's not a cat in the first place.
The horse and the groom.
So there's this horse and a groom, which is not the wedding kind. It's an actual groomer who just calls himself a groom. So this groom spends all this time brushing the horse and making it look pretty. And he also takes some of the horse's oats and sells it for extra cash. Okay, stop right there. Aren't oats supposed to be really cheap? Isn't that a thing? Okay, so the horse is getting malnourished and says, you know, you should really stop worrying about brushing me and more about feeding me. Man, that's deep, I think. The moral is, don't steal your horse's oats. Especially if it talks, like you will never hear the end of it. the farmer with the goose with the golden eggs. So there's this farmer, and he somehow gets a goose that lays golden eggs. And now you might be thinking, what's with all these gooses that lay golden eggs? Jack and the Beanstalk did it. The Simpleton Brothers did it. Well, did you know that this is the very first time a goose laying golden eggs has ever appeared in writing? I actually don't know if that's true. I made it up. I mean, it might be true. I don't know. It was 500 BC, you guys. It was a long time ago. And the goose only lays one egg a day. And the farmer gets greedy and wants more eggs. So he thinks, oh, I bet all the eggs are inside the goose. So he chops up the goose, and guess what? There's only more goose parts in there, not eggs. Okay, so the moral, know how basic things work. Especially if you're a farmer and you don't know how geese work. Or at least be close friends with someone who knows this. Hey man, I don't think that's how geese work. I mean, I get how you might think this is a magic goose because everything about this is physically impossible. But we could already live pretty decent lives with just one egg a day. Like, we're already in the top 1% now. How can a goose carry around a golden egg inside of itself? Do you know how heavy gold is? If there's solid gold, can a goose ever have babies? This seems like an evolutionary dead end to me. The bat and the weasels. So there once was this bat, and he fell. Somehow. Aesop never really says how it fell. It's a bat. It can fly. Okay, so the bat gets caught by a weasel. Like, one of these things? Okay, so you're saying that a bat gets caught by a weasel because he fell. Whatever, okay. So the weasel says, I am an enemy to all birds, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, I'm not a bird, I'm a mouse. Oh, what are these things that look like wings? Oh, these? That's my blanket, because I'm cold. Okay, that part wasn't in the story. So the weasel lets him go, but then it happens again with a different weasel, and this weasel says, I am an enemy to mice, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, oh, tiny weasel, but I'm not a mouse. I'm a bird. And then he lets him go. Again. Sometimes Aesop wrote the moral you're supposed to take at the end. He did it with this one, and the moral verbatim is, look and see which way the wind blows before you commit yourself. So are you saying to follow the crowd? Like, go with the flow? That's not really a good moral, Aesop. Also, why didn't the bat just say, I'm a bat, losers, and I can fly later? It's also teaching you to make up lies on the spot that contradict your first lie. That's how you get caught lying. Okay, so last fable, the fox and the crow. So this crow has a piece of cheese in her beak, and this fox comes along and is like, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, I just love your feathers. I wish I could just hear you sing. This crow is now very flattered, and she goes to sing, and then the cheese falls out of her mouth, and the fox eats it. And then the last line, this is beautiful, the fox says, you have a voice, madam. I see. What you want is wits. Moral of the story, everyone wants to steal your cheese. Don't let your guard down for a second. That would be a good t-shirt design. Like, it would say, everyone wants to steal your cheese, and then it would have like a silhouette of a fox and a crow. Someone make that t-shirt. I'll buy it.
I don't know if any of you guys had to do this in high school, but in my high school, you had to take a physical education credit to graduate. So normally, to get it out of the way, in 9th grade, all the boys would take PE, and all the girls would take dance. But sometimes, the really white boys would take dance. And you could always point them out during dance recitals. So I actually took PE my sophomore year because I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade. But that was okay because I fit in quite perfectly with all the other skinny white boys. And there's like this long moment in the first 10 minutes of class where all you do is sit in the locker room and wait until coach says, okay, let's do this. So one day we all got bored and just started flicking water bottle caps. You know, just the caps and the little whoop-ah! We just started flicking, you know, like little tiny frisbees. We took caps from the trash and we would just whoop-poo, shoot them at each other, you know? Whoop-ah! And it was all fun, you know, and no one really got hurt, and I'm pretty sure I'm the one who started it, but whatever. And then when we did our physical education class, it was like extra hard. Like we ran 2 laps instead of 1, and we had to do wall sits while holding medicine balls. And then afterwards, when we were all sweaty and tired, the teacher goes, you want to know why today was extra hard? It's because you're flicking water bottle caps at each other.
What?
Fast forward a couple, I don't know, a month, and these 2 kids get the idea to play a game called Bodies. And if you aren't familiar with that game, it's a game where you punch someone, that's it. You're not allowed to hit their face though, just their bodies. Which is why it's called Bodies. And you'd think at least one of us would be like, hey, you guys. Oh, wait, their voices should be squeaky.
Hey, you guys. Coach didn't like that we were throwing water bottle caps before. Maybe we shouldn't do this.
So, you know, I obviously couldn't let that happen without watching. And these two kids start playing, and one kid isn't even punching back, which is a strategy I would not use playing that particular game. And then all of a sudden, the dude taking the punches falls off his feet and hits his head on the hard tile and doesn't get up.
Did I win?
So we're a couple of young bros, and we're like, hey, bro. 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 So we had to tell the teacher, and the teacher got the nurse, and a little time passed, and at that point he did wake up a little, and the coach asked him what happened. And he knew he would get in trouble if he told the truth, so he lied and said,
I don't know, I just passed out and got all these punch marks.
Although it is possible he could have legitimately forgot. And then the coach asked the class what happened, and everyone was like, oh, yeah, geez, man, yeah, he just passed out. Yeah, I saw him. He just flopped down. And we almost got away with it, except one kid, I forget his first name, but his last name was like for Wilkins or something. Ugh, and he had the stupidest bowl cut, too. Ow, so stupid. He tells the coach, they were playing bodies, and person A falcon punched person B. And then we already know we're in a whole heck of a trouble. But the nurse called the PE teacher and said, this kid needs to get his stuff. And coach said to the class, someone needs to get this kid his stuff. I got it. I'll get his stuff. And I'm told that the class had to do lunges down the track field. But I wouldn't know, because I took my sweet time getting him his stuff. And then a year later, I heard our PE teacher got fired. For separate reasons.
Yeah, I'm not really sure you should do a video about Arizona. I mean, only people from Arizona will think it's funny.
I'm gonna do it anyway. So if you saw my Bashes video, which I think was the fifth one in the French Trip series, you'll know that I live in Arizona. So cool, I'm gonna talk about it. Pros and cons of living in Arizona. Pro. We got cacti. And in fact, we, and a tiny bit of Mexico, are the only place in the world with saguaro cactuses. I mean cacti. Boom! And as an extra bonus, they look really funny with Christmas decorations on them. Con. Not a lot of trees. Which, I mean, who needs trees? They just stand there. All they do is provide shade and oxygen. I guess you could climb them. I don't need that. Instead of trees, we have these things. Pro. We have In-N-Out. Okay, that store technically originated in California, but it's moved to here, and it's delicious. I actually applied there, and I got an interview. They didn't hire me, though. You guys are missing a con. The heat. It's unbearable. In the summer, you can expect the weather to be in triple digits. We don't have to be told not to leave our dog or babies inside cars, because we're already dying of heat stroke while the air conditioning is on. Pro, we don't have daylight savings. Which might seem like a good thing, but the only reason we don't is because con, the sun is trying to kill you. Yes, it's hot here. Pro, it's... I think we got the Grand Canyon, which is like one of the seven wonders of the world, I guess. And it can be seen from the Great Wall of China. I'm just kidding, that's not true. Oh, I got it. Pro. Citrus. We grow oranges, lemons, and grapefruits. They only get ripe in the winter, though. These are actually part of the three C's of Arizona. We have citrus, copper, cats, cacti, and cattle. And calcium, because of all the sunshine we're getting. Con. It hardly rains here. Yes, that's a bad thing, because I never learned how to close an umbrella. Okay, that's an exaggeration. Of course I know how to close an umbrella, but it was a very hard learning curve. And Arizona was not built to get rained on. When we do get rain, streets flood, schools close, and trees, well, these kinds of trees, fall. Pro. So, yeah, the summer can be unbearable, but winter is a total breeze. Winter is when the weather is perfect. While everyone else has to deal with stuff like this, here all we get is ripe lemons perfect for making cold lemonade with. And because our winters are so not really wintery, we have a bunch of old people who move down here in the winter and then move back to their summer home in Minnesota or whatever. They're like birds who migrate south in the winter, but like snowbirds, which is coincidentally what we call them. So really it's sort of a pro slash con. On one side, we have tolerable weather, but on the other side, old people.
You know, I can't really think of any more pros, so we're just gonna say more cons. Apparently, Phoenix was ranked number 10 on the rudest cities in America, which, okay, how do you measure a city's rudeness level? Was the person making this list, like, seeking out rude people and comparing them to other cities, like, oh, this person in Phoenix called me a piece of sh**, but this person in Wyoming only called me a piece of crap. So, I guess Phoenix just has more rude people. Add it to the list. And also on the same list, we apparently had some of the worst drivers around, which I can sort of see because everyone here drives 7 to 15 miles over the speed limit. But I really hate slow drivers, so it's kind of a pro for me, but I guess it's a con. Also, did you guys know that a haboob is another name for a dust storm? And I know this because we've had to use that word before. And because we call them that, dust storms become 20 times more awesome. In fact, we're probably excited to see haboobs just so we can make jokes about them. As soon as we see a cloud of dust on the horizon, we all go, ah, guys, it's a haboob! You guys remember us? This is what we call it. And then we go inside and make jokes like, oh man, this is one massive haboob. And lastly, probably the worst con of all, the heat. I know I already mentioned it 3 times, but I don't think I've really driven my point home here. It's so hot here. I am literally sweating right now as I'm recording this, and that's not on the script.
Please get me out.
And some of you watching are probably like, but James, it's a dry heat, right? That means it's not as bad. Let me answer that question with another question, and then an answer. Do you know what else a dry heat is? Ovens. And volcanoes. And that's where I live.
You might be thinking that me giving you advice on pitching a show is insincere or not applicable because of that. But listen, there was still a whole lot of work that went into my pitch for a TV show, and even with all my subscribers, statistically, I still got turned down way more times than I got picked up. If Netflix is just green-lighting everyone with a big sub count, then why doesn't I Did a Thing have a show, huh? Why doesn't Mr. Beast have a Netflix show? Oh, actually, he's doing just fine. By the way, if you are someone with a lot of subscribers, don't just walk into a studio and say, hey, I have a lot of subs, give me a show, okay? Walk in and say, hey, I have a lot of subs and free merchandise for you, okay? Diversification is key. Networks like Netflix, Cartoon Network, and Nickelodeon, they're in the biz of making content for their platform and in turn getting you, the viewer, to watch said content on said platform, thus generating a perpetual money-making cycle that everyone, including you, benefits from. Now, the executives in charge don't have all the time to come up with every single show they're going to make, so they turn to the general public, open their doors, and will listen to anyone pitch them their idea for a television series. But even if you have an Emmy-winning idea, if you're not able to properly sell your idea and win over the hearts of the network executives, it's not going to get picked up and developed. Then your only option is to independently fund and develop your idea yourself. But what kind of a loser would do that? And thus the art of pitching a show is born. You could honestly teach a whole class about this. Now, obviously, you can't just walk into a studio empty-handed. Alright, big idea. What if we do a show where there's a talking alligator, right? And he's like, yo, what? I'm a crocodile. You gotta come prepared, but also not be over-prepared. I was actually surprised to learn this, but going into the pitch room with finished scripts, turnarounds of your characters, and plushies will actually hurt your chances of getting picked up. The reason for this is because executives will sometimes like to change parts of your show, and if you already have all the characters and story mapped out, they'll not want to pick you up because they feel like they can't change anything. You're not even supposed to write any scripts until after you get the green light, because the executives have to approve all the scripts you make and the writers that you want to hire. So if you ever pitch a show, just be open for changes. Which, I can attest, is a very different experience to what it's like on YouTube. What you do want to bring to the pitch is this super important document called a show Bible, and then you need to convert to that show's religion. The show Bible is a document that contains everything your audience needs to know about your show. In the beginning of a show Bible, there should be a 1-to-2-sentence description that covers the main synopsis of your show. It's kind of like an elevator pitch, but here in the biz, we call it a log line. I'll give you mine as an example. When James's parents moved them to a tiny desert town where eccentric scientific minds have been brought together to do unfettered experiments, James finds himself surrounded by the children of these scientists and the offspring of their experiments. The result? Unlike in his last town, James is no longer the oddest kid around. I don't know if the show's been out by the time this video comes out, but we kinda lost the new in town theme. Like I said, the executives want to make changes. After the logline, you write a page-long backstory where you go more in-depth with your idea. Answer questions like, who are the characters? What are their goals? Where do they live? Just general stuff, because after the backstory page, you're going to write all about your characters. This is the part of the Bible where you can just go balls to the wall with details and description. Who, how, and why are your characters? What are their wants, needs, fears, flaws, likes, dislikes, and general personality traits? These are important traits to think about, even if a specific detail isn't going to be reflected in the show. Like in my Bible for the crocodile, Max, some of the things we said he liked were the rain, raw chicken, and laying on warm rocks in the sun. Now, I don't think he got to enjoy a single one of those things in the show, but these are the types of questions you have to answer to get the clearest idea of who your characters are. You should also include drawings of your characters. This can help show their personality and body language, but just keep them to doodles, because again, they're subjected to change. Next, there needs to be drawings and descriptions of specific locations that the characters spend a lot of time in. This will help show the overall world and tone of the show. And lastly, I know it's long, that's why it's called a show Bible and not a show pamphlet. You need to write out page-long episode ideas, not scripts. This will show the executives what a typical episode would look like and the direction and tone you want to go with the show. Honestly, there's so much that goes into a show Bible. I'm really only scratching the surface. If you are genuinely interested in pitching a show, or even a little interested in cartoons, then I would highly recommend looking at other show Bibles online for inspiration and how they should be formatted. It's pretty fun looking through older show Bibles and seeing the earliest versions of your favorite cartoons. This is what Mermaid Man and Barnacle Bill were going to look like. I mean, look, isn't that cool? Unfortunately, you can't just hand an executive your show Bible and silently wait for them to finish reading it. You also have to energetically and flawlessly pitch your show. Executives listen to like 9 pitches a day, so if you're not selling your show with 110% enthusiasm, they're gonna pass right over you. So you have to practice your pitch like your paycheck depends on it. Me and the showrunner I worked with, Ethan Banville, practiced our pitch so many times. We practiced in front of a mirror, to our family members. We filmed ourselves practicing, and then watched the footage, gave each other notes, and then burned the evidence. We memorized our whole Bible, but despite everything, the first time we pitched, I was still nervous. I had no idea what pitching a show would be like. We brought in our stapled Bible that we typed out on Microsoft Word, and I thought, this isn't enough. This Bible doesn't even have a spine. I still thought we needed to bring in finished scripts and character designs to show the executives how much thought we put into the show. But Ethan reassured me, no, the executives don't want to be overwhelmed with content. But when we got to the lobby, I saw the group ahead of us pitching their show, and they had cardboard cutouts of their characters, and they were handing the executives custom plushies, and I turned to Ethan, we are so underprepared. When we got inside, we pitched the show just like we practiced 1,000 times, and then the executive told me that no studio would ever want to work with a YouTuber. Yeah, sometimes they don't even wait to tell you in an email that they're going to pass. Sometimes they just get it over with right then and there. So, you know, not the best confidence boost for your first pitch. But we kept on pitching, and we kept hearing a lot of no's. And if you ever pitch, get ready to hear that response. Everyone in Hollywood has a story of being turned down by everyone and then finding the right home for their idea. And sometimes really talented people work for years on an idea and it goes nowhere. So the fact that I was even able to make something and it didn't get canceled, I'm incredibly grateful for. But getting a show greenlit is not the only way to get it made. You can always put in the work and develop something yourself. No, you won't have a network backing you with tons of money, but if you truly believe in your idea, you should at least put something out for the world to see and over time build your own audience and then, who knows, maybe even sell it to a network. But not the one who said they never work with a YouTuber. They're horrible. Okay. That's all the time I got. I gotta get back to watching Oddballs streaming October 7th on my Netflix.
So I feel a bit obligated to talk about France. It was really fun, really. Okay, one thing though. Every meal is like super important in France. Except for breakfast for some reason. For lunch and dinner, everyone sat down together as a family and talked. But for breakfast, they were just like, here's a croissant. Okay, let's go. I mean, breakfast is only the most important meal of their day. And I was going to make a joke about how they have an entire aisle of cheese in the grocery store, but I realized back home we have an entire aisle for candy and ice cream. So whatever. We went to the Louvre, which was like, so amazing. They had really cool art by famous people. They had the famous statue with no arms. They had these really fancy rooms because apparently people used to live here. And probably the most famous painting in the world, the Mona Lisa. That room was super crowded. And right behind the Mona Lisa, there was a super tall painting that probably took 20 years to make. The picture frame was as wide as my body. But were people crowded around this one taking pictures? No. I don't even know what this one's called. The American school system has failed me yet again. And as someone who likes to draw, I thought it was really cool to look at the amazing color and details. Also, I took a bunch of pictures of butts. Look, this is the really famous no arm one. Look at her butt. So I had a good time, but afterwards we went to the Picasso Museum, Modern Art Museum, and this other one. I forgot its name. It was French. And it's kind of weird going into these places as someone who likes to draw cartoons. Oh, I like the colors, they're pretty neat, and oh, putting the face on the side of the head, that's an interesting design. But I kind of have to draw the line somewhere, Picasso. I mean, just look at this. Why is it framed? Someone framed this. And Picasso was a good artist. Shoot, he's better than me. So why did they throw this stuff to hang up? Would you call this his best work? It's not just Picasso. Look at the modern art museums. My favorite piece was the painting of a black ring. In fact, I loved it so much that I drew over it in my phone and probably spent more time in thought than the actual artist. I'm not saying the more real a painting looks, the more artsy it is. Wait, yes I am. I mean, look at my drawings. No, seriously, look at them. Their heads are super round and they're so white they can't dance. If I entered an art contest against Leonardo da Vinci, he would win! Because his stuff took talent. It's not easy to draw something that looks exactly like it does in real life. But cartoons? They're easy. They're so easy. And I know I'm leaving out paintings with color schemes and forms. Now after seeing this, I've come up with something called the Keith Haring Principle to help people like me better understand modern art. In the late 70s, a man named Keith Haring drew graffiti in subway stations and had sort of a unique design. Whenever he started to draw graffiti, he never thought about what the finished product was going to be. He just drew whatever he felt like. He ended up making thousands of them, and people started to notice his unique characters. Soon he got more and more famous and popular. Now he's at the point where you can buy t-shirts and mugs of his drawings, and I think that's really cool. They're interesting designs, and I would wear them. Do they belong in a museum? No. Keith made thousands of these small, simple drawings. They're still art, but not art people should pay to see. They should pay to wear and drink out of it. And by the way, this stuff is in no way research, so I'm talking completely out of my butt right now, but I think Picasso and the circle painting should be on t-shirts, or kids' books, or even webcomics. So people would say, hey, I like your shirt. Thanks, I like the design, and would never frame it and hang it up on my wall.
I just wanted to say thanks. I'm glad you came along, partner.
I wasn't happy with the lighting in the last video, so I might have gone overboard for this one. If you only watch this video for the sprinkles, hold on. I need to get serious with my audience. Guys, do you like my haircut? Jaden's mom actually did it for me. Okay, but seriously, guys, something big just happened. Dwayne The Rock Johnson retweeted one of my comics. Woo! But can we talk about how the comic that got The Rock's retweet has less likes than the tweet I made about The Rock retweeting one of my comics? But also, as some of you might know, my channel recently hit 1 million subscribers. The big 1-0-0-0-0-0. which is a little terrifying. Here's a YouTube trivia question for all the little kiddies in my audience. Who was the first YouTuber to get 1 million subscribers? I'll give you a hint. When Fred posted his 1 million subscriber special, I was only 12 years old at the time, almost 13. But I remember watching that as a little kid and just thinking, whoa, 1 million subscribers, that's so many. But now, I'm not feeling how I thought I would feel. Maybe I'm just too young, or maybe I just don't feel anything. I watched YouTube all the time growing up. Charlie the Unicorn, Potter Puppet Pals, The Gummy Bear Song, Knox Corner, Salad Fingers. Those videos were my jam, and now it's so weird to think that my videos could be someone else's jam. I know you guys all want to see the sprinkles, so...
So some of you might be new to this channel, and what I do for subscriber milestones is I pour however many subscribers we have onto a cake. So that way you can look at the cake and see you. Well, unless you subscribed after this video came out. When I started this tradition, I didn't realize just how many people were subscribed to me. Or I didn't realize how big sprinkles were. And also, I might be using some incorrect math. In my first video, I counted 1,000 sprinkles, and then I weighed them, which was probably fine for the 100,000. But now, I'm using the same data to count to 1,000,000. So I thought, I'll just get twice as much as I did last time, and hopefully, that should be good. So I have my 42 pounds of sprinkles here. But just in case we still don't have enough, here's the infinity sprinkle. Another one. Another one. Another one. Man, I can't believe these are all of them. Psych! Do it. Woo! Hooray. And then we still have a little bit more. Right here. Is this 1,000,000 sprinkles? Probably. Just sprinkle some on. Let's get some on this cake to eat. Oh, I only grabbed frosting. I felt it. Ah, yeah.
If you're subscribed, one of these is you. One of them. Right? Oh, I feel great. That's a shame we had to waste a perfectly good cake.
Good riddance. Oh, he's back. Welcome back, dude. Whoop, we got another one.
Man, this is a lot of people. I think this is the first subscriber special where I actually have that much in sprinkles.
Look, some of you are on me. Hello, boys.
Delicious.
Well, now there goes my feet again.
This is on my foot. Thanks for subscribing. Oh, this trampoline is probably ruined.
So now I'm going to talk about how I started out on YouTube. It's going to get maybe a little serious. My journey as a YouTuber did not start out on YouTube. I used to post my comics on Tumblr first. And before that, I used to draw comics in school. And actually, I still have every single one of them. Now, a lot of these weren't that funny. Mrs. Johnson, I have some horrible news. What? It's about your son. Is he doing drugs? He joined a gang? Robbed a bank? He listens to Nicki Minaj. The horror! Okay, that one was a little funny. Hi, my name is Kevin. It happened to me when I was in the car. I was driving and before I knew it happened. I felt violated, like I was cheated of my life. It was horrible. Let it all out. And then you see that he was in a Nicki Minaj support group. I did not like Nicki Minaj growing up, apparently. But for some reason, I still drew them. A lot. It was in 2009, so I was 13 years old when I started drawing these, and I kept drawing them until I was 16 years old, and at that time I wanted to take my comics onto the next level. I wanted to put them on the internet. That's another thing about me. I wasn't an art kid growing up. You see all these talented artists saying, oh, when I was a little kid, I just couldn't be separated from my pen and paper. Not me. But I think that just goes to show you that if you work hard at something, then you can be good at anything. So I got a tablet for my 16th birthday. It was a Bamboo Create. It was about $100. And after messing around for about a month, I posted my very first comic. And I hated it. But I've seen some people defend it, so... Starting on Tumblr was a slow process. It wasn't until my fourth comic that I got one follower that wasn't my friend. It was a porn blog. But I used to pour hours into these comics, and it sucked seeing my hard work not get any attention. And I haven't really told anyone this, but it was around December of 2012 that I wanted to quit. I was upset no one was looking at my comics. I was upset my comics were looking really bad. If you look at my Tumblr for that month, I made 4 posts. 3 of them were me experimenting with my art because I just wanted to make it look good. And the one comic I made for that month, I had to force myself to finish it. And for the description I wrote, it's been a long and busy week. And I wish I could tell you what motivated me to keep going, but I don't remember. For some reason, I just didn't quit, and man, am I glad I didn't! Can you imagine if I did quit?
I'd probably still be in college.
But I kept at it, I kept drawing and growing my audience slowly, and I had around 100 followers. But then one day when I posted this comic, for whatever reason, it just exploded. And I broke 1,000 followers. I remember logging in and just seeing the numbers just spike up. And I remember being so surprised, I was like literally like thrown back in my chair. Then a few comics later, this one blew up. And from then, I just kept steadily growing. So I used to watch YouTube and Captain Sparkles all the time when I was drawing my comics. But then one day, I was like, I want to do that. So then in August of 2014, so 2 years of making comics on the internet, I posted my first video. And I hate it. I already had around 50,000 followers on Tumblr, so when I posted the video, like, my subscriber count immediately jumped to like 2,000, so that was nice. And then another 2 years went by, I got retweeted by Dwayne, and now we're here with 1,000,000. Another thing that I haven't mentioned in a video yet, I got this a month ago. It's a little late.
So maybe we can just add another 0 right there and put a comma right here. Yeah. Don't worry, it comes off.
And if you want this amazing t-shirt made by an amazing person, you're going to have to go on to Tony's website. Link in the description now that I... just because.
Also, I just wanted to show you the wall of fan art. So, you know, if your fan art didn't get featured in a video, then maybe it got featured in this board thing. Also, here's just something fun that I think you want to see. So this is where I would record audio. Just right here. I would sit down here, and there would be a microphone if it wasn't over there. So, yeah, that's it.
Want their children to be well-rounded. But the problem that every parent faces is that 7-year-olds would rather watch any video on YouTube than learn how to play the violin. So, how do these concerned parents get their children to be more active? Answer, they force them. Now, forcing your kids into activities isn't a bad thing. In fact, overall, it's extremely helpful. Forcing kids into doing something they don't want to do is the only way we can get them to go to school. Okay, saying that out loud kind of sounded wrong. Doing extra activities, especially at a young age, not only teaches you important skills, but it also teaches you what your interests are. How are you gonna know if you don't like ballet unless you try it? I've tried it, and now I can say with confidence, ballet's not for me. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's had to deal with parents signing you up for sports, instruments, and more sports. I think when you're really young, you don't realize that you have a choice. Your parents just start taking you to soccer practice every Wednesday, and you think, oh, okay, I guess I'm doing this now. But all the activities I was forced into, while I never got invested in any of them, I'm still glad I did them, you know? I forgot how old I was when my mom signed me up for soccer, but I was little enough for the goals to look like this. I can't tell you how many games we won or how many goals I scored.
It was probably close to zero, because I ultimately didn't care about soccer. The only thing I cared about was getting a treat after every game, because I earned it. I know some kids who really enjoyed playing soccer. I forget which video I mentioned this, but back in the day, there was this kid I knew named Micah. He used to live in the house directly behind mine, and we were on the same Little League soccer team. He was really good at soccer, probably better than I'll ever be, and he still plays to this day. Well, okay, it's been 4 years since I last talked to him, but he was still playing soccer to this 4 years ago. Now, did Micah's parents initially force him into playing soccer? Probably, I didn't ask, but if his parents never forced him into it, he would have never known how good he was at the game and how much he enjoyed it. But that's enough about Micah, this is my channel. I don't remember how I stopped playing soccer, I just stopped showing up to the practices 1 year, and then I never played again. And then my mom put me into Boy Scouts, and that was a lot better, because it wasn't competitive and camping is awesome and I made some dumb videos about it. So it was a return investment. Another activity my mom put me in was this martial art class called Aikido. I'm honestly surprised I've gotten 107 videos without mentioning Aikido once. Probably because it was boring and nothing interesting happened. My mom put me and my twin sister into Aikido, and we both agreed that it was boring and we didn't like it, so we decided not to remind my mom whenever she had to take us to class, and surprisingly, she forgot most of the time. Okay, look, whenever the sensei was talking, we had to sit on our knees, and that gets uncomfortable after 2 seconds. What is Aikido, I hear you asking? Aikido is a special form of martial arts in that it doesn't teach you how to fight. Aikido is all about self-defense and to also not hurt the attacker. You know those self-defense techniques that are like, if someone tries to attack you, use your keys as a knife and stab them? Aikido is not that. An Aikido master will take an attacker's arm, spin them around, and then pin them down to the floor. Now that sounds really cool on rice paper, like if someone goes to attack you, and then you block their punch and pin them to the ground, and you just give them a look like, you wanna take me on, kid? I've already got you pinned down. Now I'm not gonna hurt you, cause I'm that powerful. But if you ever attempt to attack me or my clan ever again, I will be forced to use 10% of my power and break your spine in half. And I think my mom saw that Aikido was non-violent and taught self-defense, and she thought it was a better activity than learning how to kick someone in the face. But after doing some research on Aikido, I've learned that it's not really, what's the right word, respected in the martial art community. There's a lot of people saying that the techniques of Aikido don't work against a real attack, and that if someone's really attacking you, you can't reasonably pin them down without hurting them, so it's probably a better idea to just punch back. And some people who are in Aikido think that their style of fighting is more civil and the more eloquent way of fighting, or non-fighting, so there's a tad bit of elitism in the martial art community. Now, surprisingly, I've never been in a real fight, so I can't really comment on what the more effective martial art is. I'm sure different situations call for different responses, but I don't think I'm wrong when I say that Aikido is the vegans of martial arts. After Aikido, the next thing I was forced to learn was an instrument. My parents didn't force me to do this, it was the American education system that did. In 5th and 6th grade, everyone had to take a band class, and we all chose different instruments to play, and I went with a flute. And as soon as I was given the flute, I traded it with Priscilla, who chose percussion, and that's what I did for the next 2 years. Compared to the rest of the instruments, percussion was very easy on my lungs. And it was okay if we were bad at the instrument, because we were in the very back. The first set of songs we learned was on this metal xylophone thing, but I think the teacher thought everyone was so bad at that instrument that the rest of the songs we learned was on this drum, just one drum, it looked like this. So while everyone else had to learn face and every good boy deserves fudge and whatever these lines connecting the notes mean, we cool kids in the back only had to memorize 3 notes, a hit on the drum, a hit on the side of the drum, and not hitting the drum. Now those are my favorite notes. Drums are so great, nothing beats the drums. Drums are easy. So my parents tried to get me to